right, comrades, may we belatedly start. Unlike the Kenyan situation, we've been able to deal with the bug. So let's get started. First thing, comrades, let's please switch our cellular phones off. Don't put it on silent, because when it rings on silent, it has the same effect as when it rings loud. Because at the point when it is ringing, whatever is being recorded there gets erased, so it disturbs the recording. So for the time that your phone will be on silent or vibration ringing, whatever is being said is not recorded. So may I humbly request each one of you to look at your phones, because it has this tendency of ringing right in the middle of the engagement. If not for the late comers, I bet you will not finish without a phone ringing. So please, just check your cellular phone and switch it off. Thank you for complying. Comrade Minister, welcome. We are happy to have you here, and relieved that the rumors that we got through the grapevine about this and that has been proven to be not so correct. So we're happy to have you here. No, the president released him from cabinet so that he can come to parliament and fulfill his constitutional obligation of accounting to parliament. No, we fully appreciate that, and would want that everybody should be encouraged to seize the opportunity of coming before parliament to explain and clarify things, and not look at it in an adversarial manner. It is a platform provided so that clarity can be given. Where there are problems, we can jointly say, how do we find solutions to these problems? Because they are our collective problems. All right. Let's start with the normal things, Comrade Minister, with introductions from the Minister and his delegation, the Auditor General's Office, and then Members of Parliament. And then we can then engage with the discussion. From the look of things, Comrade Minister, I don't see us sitting here for a long time. We're likely to have a very early morning. So we can go and focus on other things. It's merely an exchange of information, giving clarity, confirming certain things, and assisting us to have a better understanding of the state of things. So I'll hand over this side. Let's have introductions, and then the AG's office, and then members of parliament.
We'll do it, Sir Atam. Sibusiso Ndebele, Correctional Services Minister.
Thank you.
Tom Moyani, National Commissioner for Correctional Services.
He's not crying, he's got flu.
Good morning, I'm Thabise Musupie. I'm the Government Information Technology Officer.
Good morning, I'm Deboho Mokwena, the Chief Deputy Commissioner, Human Resources.
Good morning, my name is Nandi Mareka. I'm the Acting Chief Financial Officer.
Good morning, my name is Terence Rasaroka. I'm the Acting Chief Deputy Commissioner, Strategic Management. Good morning. My name is Vukani Dlamini, Deputy Commissioner for Internal Audit.
Good morning. My name is Mxolisi Zulu. I'm a Deputy Commissioner, Legal Services. Thank you.
Press it somewhere until it's red.
Good morning, I'm Jolie Mekwa, Acting Deputy Commissioner, Executive Management.
Good morning, I'm Logan Maestri from the Office of the Minister.
Good morning, Grant Fredericks, Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Ministry.
Good morning, I'm Pugula Masudubela from National Treasury.
Good morning, I'm Star Kafu from National Treasury.
Good morning, I'm Feli Lambete from National Treasury.
Lindy Lebatwa, Parliamentary Office, National Treasury.
Thank you. There's usually a distance between National Treasury and the accused. So I assume there was no National Treasury. You were all officials from the department. That's why I didn't even mention National Treasury. But anyway, it's fine. Carl.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Kimi Makwetu, Deputy Auditor General.
Good morning. Naeem Sirat from Corporate Executive in the Office of the Auditor General.
Good morning. Gratitude Rampaka, Auditor General.
Good morning. Musa Hlongwa, Business Executive, Auditor General.
Thank you very much. Yeah, no, that distance is appropriate. see?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Minister. From Magrinya. Naren Singh, Member of SCOPA. Just one clarification. Did I hear that there's a Deputy Commissioner for Internal Audit?
Yes, you did.
Okay. It's not on the list, but I thought I heard incorrectly.
No, you did. You did hear it correctly.
Good morning, everybody. Dion George, Member of SCOPA.
Good morning. Pierre Robby, Member of SCOPA.
I'm James Self, Member of the Portfolio Committee on Correctional Services.
Vincent Smith, Member of the Portfolio Committee.
Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, Chairperson and Members. I'm Gadrutsan, Member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Sipom Fundis, Member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Roy Ainsley, Member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Thapelo Chivan, Member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Winnie Gwenya, Member of Correctional Portfolio Committee, ANC.
Morning, my name is Tutu Ngubeni Maluleka. I'm the Member of the Portfolio Committee, Correctional Services. Thank you.
I'm Chair Stella, Member of Correctional Services.
Well, in the Lagak Islam Ravaga Division, Molelo Kua Committee, Tokomela Mato Trustcha.
Morning, I'm Eunice Nyalongo, Member of SCOP.
Tenda Basimwe Peng, Member of Parliament.
Right. Thank you. I'm Comrade Temba Godi. I chair the committee. Comrade Minister, yesterday the Auditor General presented the consolidated general report on national and provincial audit outcomes, which refocused the minds of the nation on the annual regulatory audit. I haven't seen it yet, but my good friend Saki has already provided me with a copy from the Auditor General's office. on the use of consultants in government departments, including correctional services. We had initially thought we would want to simultaneously deal with the annual report, but we felt we would not want to cloud the issues. Let's keep them separate at the level of detail. But I do believe that it might be inevitable in the course of the engagement that some of the issues that are current may drop in from time to time because of the interrelatedness of some of these things. I'm just saying, in case that happens, it does not signal that as a committee we might not at a later stage seek to have an engagement on the annual report per se. Just to say it is inevitable. And would like to welcome our colleagues from the Portfolio Committee of Correctional Services. We believe that probably in the course of our engagement they might be issues that we may need to continuously engage on, and I think they will be best positioned to take the baton later and run with those issues. So their presence serves to enhance the oversight process. I must say that we engaging the department, noting that the challenges that face the department have been there for quite some time. And I suppose the challenge we have is are we moving in cycles or we are making progress. And if we do, what are the strategic bottlenecks that need to be, you know, opened up so that the department, like other departments that had found themselves in a similar situation, is able to move out of it and does not need, you know, image-making consultants, but its reports are good enough to give it the kind of good image that it's supposed to have. But what I'm going to do, I will hand over to Comrade Roy, and he will deal with the first elements. And I think what we're going to do, let's allow Comrade Roy to deal with the issues that he has to deal with, and only when he is done, before we go to Comrade Chilwan, we'll allow comrades here to make follow-up. So if there are issues around which we feel we need to make follow-up, let's just note them down so that we don't disrupt his presentation. And also that Comrade Minister, in as much as at the end of everything else, would allow you to talk to any issues you might have noted that you feel would want to clarify, or any issues that you feel had not been touched on that you would want to clarify. We certainly do want to say that in the course of the engagement, if there are issues around which you would want to come in and assist in terms of clarification, we'll be happy to give that platform to clarify the issues at hand. So I will hand over to Comrade Roy.
Comrade Chair, thank you very much. As we've said before on this committee, we're not opposed in principle to the use of consultants. The correct use of consultants can enhance the work of the department. But what we do require is that we get value for money, that there's a transfer of skills, and that consultants are being properly managed. Now, if we look at this report, we would argue that, in fact, we are not getting value for money, there's limited transfer of skills, and consultants are not being properly managed. But as the chair says, this is an engagement. If you have arguments contrary to that, possibly by the end of this discussion, you will convince us otherwise. But Chair, I'm going to deal with three sections in the Auditor General's report. From page 44, information technology. Then I'm going to look at the virtualization project, and then the open view project, and my colleague Comrade Tapelo on my left will deal with the remaining issues in that report. Let me start with the information technology services.
Just before you start, Comrade Minister, you had wanted to say something. Let's leave it to Comrade Troy. He will guide us where he wants us to go.
Let me start with information technology services rendered by CETA. One of the very first observations made by the Auditor General is that in the provision of consultants for this project, a cost-benefit analysis was not done. Now, I'd like to know why this was not done, no cost-benefit analysis, to determine, to compare the cost of providing consultants with the cost of appointing permanent staff in the department. Now, you will know that such a cost-benefit analysis is required by the Public Service Administration Act. So that is the first question, why no cost-benefit analysis on this technology project?
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity to engage with the scoper and acknowledging the presence of the Portfolio Committee on Correctional Services and other government departments present here. The question is pointed, and certainly we would try to the best of our ability to respond to the question raised with us. Taking into account the year under review, 2007, 08, 09, 10, and the subsequent years, we want to indicate that the cost-benefit analysis was done primarily because, from our understanding, the level of manning and senior leadership at the department during that time was very junior. It was not done. This will be confirmed by the processes that we shall be following in the interaction and engagement with yourselves. One, a cost-benefit analysis is a roadmap by any government department that determines as value for money in the first place, because you're using taxpayers' money in order to achieve an intended objective. Secondly, cost-benefit analysis provides with an opportunity to be able to see whether resources that you have are capable of providing you with the end product that you envisage. Now, having gone through the Auditor General's report, it is very clear that cost-benefit analysis was not done. And that in itself provides us with an opportunity that we did later of turning that process around. One, in relation to the cost-benefit analysis, the big elephant here is CETA. And CETA has not been and continues not to provide us with the services that we as government, in particular Department of Correctional Services, we're an IT-driven organization where we should be able to account for inmates coming and inmates when they're released. Now, if the highway, which is an architectural process, is not existent, and a cost-benefit analysis that is going to give you value for money is not there, for us, that was an indictment in the organization. So there was no cost-benefit analysis. But we can confirm here today that any project that we do subsequent to this report, we do conduct cost-benefit analysis and value for money.
Okay.
Your unfortunately, we deal with, as the chair always says, the post-mortem. What happened last time? What happened prior to current events? I just want to confirm, there are a number of contracts that the AG has looked at. And just to confirm, I think we had 27, if I'm not mistaken. Would you say in all of the contracts, all of these consultant contracts, that no cost-benefit analysis was done? I'm especially concerned about the virtualization project awarded to StoreTech, the OpenView project to Hewlett-Packard, and compliance and IT audits awarded to PricewaterhouseCoopers, and the SAS operations, Pty Limited, that very large contract. Can you confirm then that no cost-benefit analysis was done in any of these, in the case of any of these major contracts?
Perhaps, Chair, if we were to start from the last one, the Busasa contract in particular, the cost-benefit analysis was conducted because if you look at the history of correctional services, the big five prisons in particular, Paulsmoor, Johannesburg, Durban-Westville, Pretoria, and St. Albans. These are your top maximum facilities in the country. In the history of this country, we have seen the ever-increasing number of inmates. Paulsmoor in particular, the capacity installed initially was about 3,000 to 4,000 inmates. As we speak today, it's sitting with 10,000 inmates. The same applies to Johannesburg, the same applies to the Big Four. Combined, they have a total of about 40,000 to 50,000 inmates. Now, why I'm saying that the cost-benefit analysis in respect to nutrition, there was a need for us to make an assessment as to whether there are benefits in the manner in which we're providing nutrition to our vendors, because it forms part of services that were outsourced.
Okay, all right.
Chair, so generally a cost-benefit analysis was not done in the contract that I've mentioned. Now, Chapter 8 of the Supply Chain Management Guide recommends that you undertake a retrospective analysis of the work undertaken by consultants. One of the reasons for this is determine if indeed you have received value for the work. Now, in any of these contracts, in particular this one I'm referring to, the CETA one, did you undertake a retrospective analysis of the work done so that you can learn from these consultants and you can learn going forward, for example, what clauses, what items to put into contracts? Did you do such a retrospective analysis, or did you undertake any kind of investigation into the use, your dependency on consultants in the department? Any kind of analysis, any kind of investigation into your dependency on consultants?
So we can confirm on record here that we have engaged CETA, having done a retrospective analysis emanating from the report of the Auditor General on this matter under review. Subsequently, we have done an analysis of the projects that are under review. One, with respect to value for money, we can confirm here most of the projects that were undertaken at the time, there was no value for money. Secondly, there was no transfer of skills. We'll demonstrate here in terms of numbers. In 2007 and 8, the number of consultants, the ratio thereof, yes.
Can we come to that later? We will come to whether the number of consultants have increased or whether in fact they decreased. In fact, it's probably my next point.
Okay.
Yeah, let me go on to that now.
Okay.
One of the reasons you appointed consultants was because of the high vacancy rate, which I think on an average during the course of this investigation was about 14% vacancy rate. Now, in your latest annual report, you indicate the vacancy rate is down to 3%. There we must commend you. But it seems to me, if you look at the figures, that despite the fact that your vacancy rate has decreased, your use of consultants has not decreased.
if in fact, if anything, your use of consultants has increased. And I want you to comment on that. Now, I know we are not dealing with the annual report, Chair, but if you do look at your latest annual report, right at the back, I think on page 203, you indicate there that there are 115 consultants used during that financial year. That is an increase from 51 in 2007 to 115 now in the last reporting year. Now, also on that page 203, although you indicate 115 consultants, you also indicate in a little line under there that with regard to the number of IT consultants, you know how much you spent, 30 million plus, on IT consultants. But you indicate there you don't know the number. So really, if you were to give us any figure, 10, 15, 20, 100 additional IT consultants and add that to the 115, Chair, what I'm not getting a sense of is, yes, a 3% now vacancy rate, but I'm not getting a sense that as the vacancy rate drops, so does your use of consultants. So I would just like a comment on that, please. Am I making sense? Is the question clear? There should be some sort of leveling off as your employment numbers go up.
Thanks, Chair. The issue of consultants in our environment, especially in IT, has been a very sore eye to ourselves. I can point out that in the financial years 2007 and 8, we had 38 consultants, as opposed against 9 DCS officials. So the ratio there was 4-1. 2008 and 9, we had 83 consultants, ratio again 9-1. The number of officials remained constant. 2010, 9 and 10, we had 183 consultants and 9 officials, ratio 20-1. 2010, 2011, now, I'd like to take a pause here, because certainly, when you look at this ratio and the issue of vacancies that we spoke about, and thanks for commending us for reducing the vacancy rate in the department, but it does have to be contextualized in figures now as to where we are. When this matter was assessed by leadership and the stewardship of the previous minister, and having escalated this matter to a high level, that we have consultants camping in correctional services, there's no value for money, there's no transfer of skills. Clearly, this ratio, in no uncertain terms, that indicate there can be transference of skill when you have a skewed relationship between consultants and our officials. But in 2010, 2011, we took a decision that we shall stop this hemorrhaging, we shall fill the position. But it is important that SCOPA and the portfolio committee understand that IT was a junior partner in the department, given the fact that it has a 17 to 16 billion, and IT was not given the prominence and leadership that it deserves. I therefore, with the leadership that was invested on me, that we stopped the so-called central services wherein IT was reposited. We therefore decided that we'll escalate IT to its proper level, appoint a DDG to lead with the issues, to provide leadership, to do the cost-benefit analysis that we're speaking about. Now, clearly, you can see if you have more consultants, they'll overwhelm your officials who are at junior level, and they'll take decisions on behalf of the department. In this instance, we have a tail wagging the dog. But I want to report the positive measures that we put in place. One, upon receipt of this report, we made an investigation emanating from the report of the Auditor General on the issues that are mentioned here. This was led by ourselves, the National Treasury, in the Office of Accountant General in particular, Mr. Freeman Nomvaro. We had a discussion and we consulted Deloitte and Touche to do a preliminary report on this matter. When the report came through, while these measures were taking place, we therefore started reducing the number of consultants in our environment. By 2010-11, the number of consultants were reduced to 79, and the number of our own officials remained at 9 because we had a process of recruitment taking place. we can safely say proudly so, that by 2010 to 2011, the number of consultants in our environment has been reduced to 29 against 39 fully-fledged officials at senior level. So there has been a turnaround. The turnaround strategy that we put in place was to create an environment wherein there's value for money, transfer of skills is in accordance to the needs of the organization.
You see, at some stage we may want to list a number of questions. We don't want to fight here and argue about detailed numbers. But my observation is your latest annual report, which says you now have 115. Excluding IT consultants, you have 115 consultants. But perhaps we can forward that as a request for additional information.
Maybe we can talk
about I still don't see this relationship, which there should be a positive relationship between decrease in the vacancy rate and a commensurate decrease in consultants. Let's not niggle about figures. If the National Commissioner can answer that and make an observation, it would be useful. Otherwise, we can perhaps at a later stage.
It's fine. Can we talk to that? Because your annual report says you don't know, but now you're saying 29. Should we take 29 or should
we? The Commissioner may be talking about 29 IT consultants as opposed to other consultants.
That's correct, Chairperson. Because let me contextualize this. On page 203, the project titles there were services provided, there were cost sourced. On column number 2, appointment of SACRA accredited services. Those were services. I don't want to split hairs here. Those were services which we wanted, which were critical in terms of training. Technical resources, these are EPMO members. But be as it may, I just want to also indicate that in the field of consultancy, the number of people that you have, some are short-term, some are long-term. And you may find that in a particular point when you do an audit, you stop the clock, the number is 80. But as you go forward, some of these officials are there for a short-term, 2 months, 3 months, for a specific job that needed to be done. And hence, we are able and capable to provide for the value that we paid for. So those are the discrepancies, perhaps, which were not contextualized in this report. But certainly, from a vacancy perspective, and from an IT perspective, consultants have been reduced to a very negligent figure, as I've indicated.
Chair, may I just advise that you see, in terms of the public service and administration instruction, you have to do quite a comprehensive report on the use of consultants. May I just advise, maybe in the next annual report, that you are more conscientious about how you present this report to consultants, so we don't have this confusion about numbers. Just perhaps in your next annual report. It's too late for this one, but in the next one. Chair, the National Commissioner mentioned the difficulty they have with ICT in the department. Now, if you look at the AG's report on page 44, we spent 36,480,000 rand on Systems Development Directorate. Is that in the ICT field, Commissioner? Is that mainly ICT?
Yes, it's ICT.
And the question I want to then pose is, are we getting value? Remember earlier on I said we judge these things by whether we're getting value for money or not. Then are we getting value for money for this 36 million rand? Because again, I don't want to refer too much to the annual report, Chair, but if you look at the annual report, and you have a copy of the Commissioner, on page 32, of your latest annual report, you say there at the top, due to challenges relating to ICT basic infrastructure, the development of a corporate performance management system was put on hold. You say on page 51 of the same report that your integrated security technology strategy target was not met. You say in the same report on page 52 that your functional electronic inmate tracking system to monitor movement of offenders within correctional centers was not achieved. So it seems to me then you still have huge challenges in this directorate or the sector, despite the fact that we have spent over 36 million rand on ICT just in that area alone. So you seem still to have, despite us spending this money, you still have these challenges. What, if anything, are you doing to going forward with your ICT challenges?
Chairperson, I did indicate that IT is the platform for correctional services to be able to execute its mandate. Certainly, I also did indicate that there was no value for money, precisely because, as we speak, some of those things that were acquired at the time, they have not been delivered successfully to the department. And I said very clearly, the elephant in the room is CETA. Now, the EPM, the projects that were earmarked.
So can you just clarify that first point, or is it the second point?
CETA.
You say the services for which you paid, are you saying the goods were not delivered or the work was not performed? What is it that has not been delivered to the department, but for which you have already paid?
What we have paid, the 80 million and the subsequent figures, the goods were delivered, and the skewness of the consultant versus our official of the services, therefore they cannot be continued. That's why we had to stop, because there were no one was able to deal with the projects in the manner that was configured. And the problem here in particular lies with the organization in the manner in which consultants were used in configuring the IT system in the department. So in terms of skill, for example, to exemplify this matter, the RDOMS, Remind Detainees Officials Management System, which was brought into being in 2005, up till now is not being used in the department. But money has been paid, so there was no value for money.
So what you're really doing is confirming then the finding of the Auditor General on page 46, that in this case the Customer Relationship Management Service Level Agreement did not include a transfer of information technology skills as a deliverable. In a sense, you're confirming that. Why is that the case? Because...
Comrades, can you pull the mic? Please?
Why is that the case? Because transfer of skills is a requirement of supply chain management policy. Why was that? Transfer of skills not part of that. Why was it not a deliverable?
Chair, perhaps I would like to reemphasize the fact that there was a skewed relationship between consultants and our own officials. And the overwhelming number of consultants in our sphere, there was no way that the transfer skew was going to take. And also underpinned by the fact that the cost-benefit analysis of the roadmap that was planned at the time will be able to address the problems that the department was facing. So if you have a 4-to-1, 9-to-1, ever-increasing number of consultants in our environment, invariably, you will not have a transfer of skills from a senior consultant to a very junior consultant to junior official in the department who might not be offered with the IT intricacies in that environment. So that in itself indicates the trajectory that we have given to yourselves, that we had a number of consultants camping in the department while the number of our own officials was not increasing. So there was a waiting of appetite to have consultants running the department.
At the very least, though, is this very important principle of the transfer of skills, without which you will be eternally dependent on outside consultants. At the very least, is that part of your supply chain management policy? Is it at least a policy? Sometimes policies are things we aim to achieve. We don't, but at least they're there in policy form. Is that at least, at the very least, part of your policy?
Sure. If we were to talk and move the clock and the pendulum forward, as we speak, we're speaking about value for money in our environment. That aspect of cost-benefit analysis is taking place in our environment. Certainly, it is key for us as a supply chain management take into account that whatever we do in terms of drawing consultants, which we shall have for a long time, take into account that basically at the base of everything is a transfer of skills. Now, we have demonstrated here that the ratio has changed, and therefore it is the mandate of the JITO and the organization that transfer skills become a permanent feature. There shall be no contract, especially where the scarce skills that this matter will not be addressed. With 29 consultants and 38, as I indicated, of our senior officials, transfer of skills in our service level agreement is the cornerstone of what we do. So going back, lamentably, there was no way there was going to be a transfer of skills. It's lamentable, but we've taken measures to address that matter, that we shall not have consultants being running the department. That was exemplified by elevating the ICT component to a higher level, from to a DDG level and the subsequent positions.
As the chair says, these are historical things. In some sense, we are repeating some of these things we hear year after year. For example, when you reported to us when we interrogated you on your 2010-2011 annual report, you reported that you'd appointed a consortium under KPMG and SABNT to assist with your internal audit, and for that you paid $8.4 million. You reported that to us last time we engaged you. Now, again, it's a question of value for money. It's again a question for transfer of skills. Because despite spending $8.4 million on this consultant to assist an internal audit function, we still get a qualified audit opinion. Your audit committee in your latest annual report still expresses its concern about a lack of internal audit. So again, we come back to the same questions. Did we get value for this $8.4 million rand? Why were skills transferred from KPMG and this consortium with SABNT? So that going forward, your internal audit function is strengthened. It illustrates the point I think we've been making about value and transfer of skills. So despite spending all that $8.4 million, we still get a qualification. We still get a long list of emphasis of matters. What did we spend the money on?
Chair, with your permission, perhaps going to internal audit. Once again, we deal with historical, but we shall not fear to go back and face the issues that happened then. With respect to internal audit, once again, Chairperson, with the leadership that we provided in the department in 2010, internal audit, given the magnitude of this organization, was juniorized. I want to report it was juniorized. And we took a principled decision that we shall not have an organization, given the historical perspective of the audit reports, that opinions that we have heard from the Auditor General, that we shall have internal audit at that level. It was in 2011 when we once again had to deal with internal audit leadership. We can speak today that internal audit leadership is at the deputy commissioner level, which means the chief director. In the past, it was reported to director. And I can confirm here that internal audit did not have the capacity to understand and be able to provide all the risks associated with dealing with a budget of 16 to 17 billion. Now, historically, this meant, therefore, there needed to be a position that we take as a department to deal with the problems that we've seen and not sit and look at the problems as if there's no solution to it. We have indicated here that we have a Deputy Commissioner of Internal Audit, a Chief Audit Executive, Mr. Lamin. That in itself has provided stability in terms of assessment of our internal audit processes. But there was, with relation to the $8.4 million that was spent, with hindsight, one would say that the report gave us a sense that there is a need for us to heighten the level of leadership. And therefore, the position that, and the team that needed to lead internal audit also was strengthened and scaffolded. So we can speak with confidence here that internal audit, and we shall deal with the audit opinions that subsequently came after our leadership took over, that we have dealt with issues of leadership and vacancy on key critical skills in the department.
Okay, appointment of Deputy Commissioner, that shows some proactivity. So one looks forward then to a strengthened internal audit function. But again, we await the next annual report to see if there in fact have been any improvements. Chair, the audit...
Before you move on, I think if you look at the annual report on page 203, you still have had to use $14 million on consultants to assist your internal audit function. We had 86 consultants for 107 workdays at $14 million.
Are you encouraging me to refer more and more to the annual report?
No,
I avoided that. But
I wanted to that your optimistic note must be.
I'm an optimist.
I must throw this dose of realism to that optimistic note that we still have this 14 million. Not 14 cents, nor is it 14 red. 14 million. So, yes, it's a process, but we're starting from a very, very low base. I think that's the point I'm making. Yes.
May I carry on?
Yeah, sure.
The Auditor General finds that services were rendered and payments amounting to over 12 million rand to CETA before the service level agreement was signed. Four times, different service level agreements totaling over 12 million. Payments made before the thing was even signed. How is that possible? If there had been a dispute between you and CETA as to what was to be delivered or not, on what basis would have you resolved that dispute if there was no agreement in place? That's the first question. Number one, what would you have referred to? If they said, no, you said we deliver this, and you said, no, we said you deliver this, how would you have dealt with such a dispute, number one? Number two, surely somebody must be held accountable for this, for making payments before an agreement is even signed. Who was anybody held accountable? Was anyone disciplined for this financial transgression? So that's two questions.
Chairperson, sitting where I am, I would not have paid before a service level agreement is signed. But having taken note of these irregularities, as management, we took the high road of accountability. Certainly, officials were involved in this transaction. A disciplinary process has been put in place. I have indicated to this committee that upon receipt of this report by the Auditor General, and having escalated the matter to the Minister then, we therefore involved the National Treasurer, and we did an analysis. We can mention here that officials were involved in all these transactions that we may speak about. Some are consultants, and therefore we want to indicate that legal opinion is sought as to recover the monies which were not properly used for the objective intended. But I want also to indicate that officials who are correctional services members, disciplinary processes were instituted. And that process in itself, one would have liked that it concluded earlier, but like any other investigations, you don't want to have an investigation that is not watertight. So when this process started, and the report that we have here, which we would not circulate, we do have a hard copy from Pricewaterhouse on these issues that we are referring to ourselves, which our legal unit that has been established at a senior level also is providing us leadership and thought as to which measures we need to put in place. I can confirm that it was an irregularity flouting of PFMA of paying consultants for any work that has not been done before. There are instances in this report wherein consultants were paid within 20 or 30 days after they were awarded the contract, whatever it is. Now, those are irregularities. That's flouting of the PFMA National Treasury. But we can confirm here that we have not sit back and look at this matter without giving them due attention. Deloitte and Touche, as well as PwC, including National Treasury, are part and parcel of the forensic that we have conducted. Where there will be a need for us to recover monies, we shall do so without fear or favor.
Chair, would you allow me to commend the department without sounding too positive on being proactive in this respect, and fairly soon after the production of this AG's report, embarking on such an investigation? We look forward to hearing the outcome of these disciplinary hearings. Chair, my next point, Commissioner, would you agree that the department exercised, and I think you have confirmed this already, poor control over contracts and payments in possible contravention of regulations? Now, let me refer, I'm sure you have this document in your office. It's a very useful document on the appointment of consultants. It's addressed to all accounting officers, Supply Chain Management Office, Practice Note Number SCM3. Very useful. It's your Bible and your guideline when it comes to appointing consultants. And I want to refer to paragraph 16.1 quickly of that. It says here in paragraph 16.1, I'm sure you're aware of this, any granting of a substantial extension of the stipulated time for performance of a contract or agreeing to any substantial modification of the scope of a contract or, importantly, making any changes in the contract that would in aggregate increase the original amount of the contract by more than 15% will be subject to the approval of the accounting officer. That last part is the important one. More than 15% approval of the accounting officer. Now, on page 46 of the report, the Auditor General finds that there was no ceiling price to this contract. No ceiling price. It was spent and spent and spent. It was in the contract itself. There was no indication of how far you could spend. But more importantly, in the light of what I've just read, the AG finds that in the 2007-2008 financial year, the department paid 19.5% more than the contract value in contravention of this thing I've just read, unless there is authorization. And found in 2008-2009, 81.7% more than the contract value. On page 46. You see it on page 46. Now, what I want to know, is there any proof? I can find no proof that the accounting officer of the time authorized such modification. Is there any proof at all? That can be done, but the accounting officer must authorize or delegate his authorization to somebody else. I can find no indication that was ever done.
Thanks, Chair. We are not in dispute nor in contradiction with the Auditor General's report. But certainly, the points that you have mentioned here, poor contract management, was a reality. There were no regulations between the contractor or the consultant and the DCS. Appointment of consultants was not done with a proper assessment of the situation that demanded their presence in the department.
But, Commissioner, how do these things happen?
Well, Chair, I wouldn't be able to answer for that situation, but I can answer for the current situation. This was 2007-2008.
Nobody held accountable for this contravention of this practice, not?
Well, as I said, the report will give us direction. And
maybe this report you referred to?
Yes, it will give us, but I cannot really, at this point and with due respect, be able to account for such omission, if any. Because for any contract, I agree with you, if a contract, the ceiling is 18 million, and there is a need for that to be in excess, there has to be reasons beyond reasonable doubt as to why there is an increase for the contract. And that the accounting officer, as the ultimate arbiter, will have to get all the relevant points. In this instance, there wasn't.
Who was the accounting officer then?
Just a minute, comrade. Please, we've said switch off your cellular phone, unless if you're a late comer. We've said switch off your cellular phone, because with the noise that it's making, it means whatever is being said is not recorded.
Who was the accounting officer then?
Chairperson, 2004-09, Minister Al-Balfour, 2004-09, there were a number of accounting officers in the department.
Well, maybe we must wait for your report.
There was Ms. MT, there was Ishuba, there was Peterson, and there was Sibeko.
Okay,
so 2007 was Sibeko.
Wait for you to process the report that you referred to earlier on. I want to move on, Chair, to the next one. Virtualization project. On page 47, we've established that no cost-benefit analysis was done with regard to that project, which was awarded to StoreTech. The contract amount was for over 11 million rand to install new information technology and to provide training. Now, we have a number of concerns with this consultant. First of all, the three members of the Bid Evaluation Committee were all information technology consultants. Why was the department not represented? Supply chain practitioners are required to be part of these bid evaluation committees. Now, in the absence of the department being represented, who ensured that the correct procurement processes were followed? Why was there no member of the department on this bid evaluation committee as required? Who looked after the interests of the department on that committee, if anyone?
Chair, I just want to submit once again that the year under reference on the virtualization. Virtualization is a software that needed us to have a migration to a VPN approach wherein we can have our systems upgraded. Certainly here the consultants were having a field day. As I've indicated, they were the ones who were running the department, and therefore the cost-benefit analysis was not there. It's very lamentable. But money was spent, and it is very clear that there was a gross violation of PFMA, and there was no way, I submit here, that if you have very senior consultants in your environment and junior officials who are supposed to watch those who have more skills than they do, and hence they were not in the bid evaluation committee, that's another flagrant violation of PFMA and treasury regulations. I cannot account for that, but certainly whoever was at the helm should have seen that you're dealing with high value, very strategic component of the department, which is IT. The evaluation of any of those processes in terms of the services that we needed, at least you needed to have a member of correctional services. So
we hope the people responsible are mentioned in that report of yours. And we'll give you time maybe to process that report. But if they are not in that report, these things must be investigated, even now.
Well, here I can say, Chairperson, the person who gave the outcome was a consultant, and we know who it was who took a decision on awarding that contract. It was a consultant.
Who is that consultant?
It was Urombo.
And it was just on the eve of 2009 elections. February 2009 and completed payment on May 2009. So the timing is...
All right.
AG also finds that prior to this consultant being appointed, the one we've just been speaking about, a briefing session for all potential bidders should have taken place. Now, there are no minutes indicating such a briefing session took place, and all prospective bidders should have been invited to this briefing session. Why were no minutes taken? Who was responsible for not recording this very important meeting? What, if any, action was taken against that person? And can we get a list of the people that were at that meeting or should have been at that meeting? All the other potential bidders.
Chair, we've taken note, certainly when we come back to yourselves with a full report, we'll be able to provide with that. But once again, in my understanding as the accounting officer, tenders or whatever processes of that magnitude, due processes in relation or in compliance with supply chain management and processes of adjudication, all those processes should have been done in order for us to complete the circle. It is very clear, once again here, perhaps we're putting too much in terms of the blame, but as a reality, the consultants were in charge, and therefore whatever interest, the vested interest they had, it had to be such in a manner that nothing impedes them to complete the agenda that they had. But I can assure this committee here, since I took office in this department, every process that is of high value, whether it's high or small value, is the taxpayers' money. All the people who sit and do an adjudication of any process are appointed by myself and reports are given to myself. So there is accountability here. And therefore, I cannot have a situation of dereliction of responsibility. I therefore want to submit that the virtualization project, as it has been given to yourselves here, the flouting failure to comply with the basic principles of our supply chain management, in my guardian, in my leadership, that is not taking place. I'm unable to confirm here whether I'll be able to find minutes. It would be really foolhardy for a unit that was having an agenda to have minutes of such an important matter if they knew that they were flouting processes. But it is possible from our officials who may still exist that they should be able to give us a number of people who might have been in those meetings. But I don't think I'll be able to find any piece of paper that alludes me. If we do, we shall certainly appreciate that.
Okay.
If these matters are not touched upon in the report that you referred to, the forensic report, then they must be investigated even now, although it happened years ago. We want an investigation into them. To the other concerns we have about this contract, which again contravene this document I've referred to, the supply chain management 3 of 2003, but I'm not going to ask questions because we will get the same kind of response. We'll wait for this report to see if these matters are dealt with. But finally, on this contract, can you confirm that the deadline for the project was May 2009, but that the full contract amount of 11 million rand, over 11 million rand, was paid on the 19th of May 2009? But that as of January 2012, the project had not yet been completed. Again, paying the full amount almost immediately, and services not rendered. Again, we would like to know who was responsible, what action, if any, was taken against that person. We would like to know, in this conflict, was there not a penalty clause that can be levied against this company? StoreTech, I think. Yeah, StoreTech. Any penalty that can be levied against them? And thirdly, is the project now complete? Who was responsible? What action taken against that person or those people? Was there a penalty clause? Has it been levied? Where are we now with the project?
Chairperson, names can be named. 11.7 million on StoreTech, that's inclusive of that. That project is not complete. But certainly...
Even as we speak, not completed?
No.
Now, what action have you taken against StoreTech?
Chair, I've indicated that when this was brought to our attention and also at the appointment of a DDG at this level, a review of this virtualization project was done in order for us to have value for money for what partly was delivered to us. But I can indicate that it is going to be difficult because we need to change the terms and the specifications in order to meet the current situation. If we have to take a step back, a project that was conceived in 2009 and a project that is done now, there are two different technologies because technology migrates. So there is a need for us to change the spec in order to fit with the current situation. I can confirm here that disciplinary measures have taken place against the officials involved, and also the report does confirm what we are saying here. And certainly when the process is concluded, we shall be in a position to provide yourself with a final outcome.
Commissioner, it worries me just a little bit when you say when this was brought to your attention, I assume by this report of the AG. And so what you're really also saying is that if it was not for this investigation by the AG, the department would not be aware of where you are with this project, whether it's complete or not. Surely you have a project manager, surely you have staff that report to you on a regular basis on progress made with regard to projects such as this. And we don't have to wait for every 10 years for the AG to report on these matters before they are brought to our attention. That worried me just a little bit, unless I misunderstood you.
Chair, I think I need to clarify this. I would not have known as the accounting officer, frankly speaking.
Not you personally.
No,
system.
I would not have known that the system has been configured because you have junior officials who are not at the helm and leadership of this organization. And you have consultants who have been running the show. So this information I would have picked up later, and that would have been late for us to take preactive measures on this matter. We certainly appreciate the fact that a government department like the AG has been able to pick this up. Because bear in mind, if your internal audit is at a low level, risks are not assessed, you have a serious problem. Now, I'm saying here, this matter for us, by the Auditor General elevating it and giving us direction, is a welcome position. But I can assure you, in the current leadership that we have, everything that we do, there's accountability. The branch managers in finance, IT, corrections, remand detention, I have a clear picture as to what is happening in the department. So I cannot claim ignorance on the issues that are currently under my leadership. So in this particular instance here, the Auditor General, I would have discovered it later. Perhaps the measures that we needed to put in place would have delayed the process of stabilizing the department. So in this instance, I just want to say that it is just unfortunate, but also something that we want to appreciate that the Auditor General has elevated to our level.
Okay. I'm sure members are making notes of any follow-ups they wish to make. I'm not going to follow up on that. I'm going to my final section, the Open Review Project, which was awarded to Hewlett Packard for over 21 million rand. Now, again, I want to refer to this this practice note. See, I've given you a copy. It's on your desk.
Yeah.
This practice note, item 5. A firm which has been engaged by the accounting officer authority to provide goods or works for the project and any of its affiliates should be disqualified from providing consulting services to the same project. Now, that's a complete disregard of the section, because in this particular case, this contract with Hewlett Packard, they compiled the project needs assessment. So they first compiled the project needs assessment, and then the very next day or whatever, they awarded this contract based on the very neat assessment that they have done. Complete contravention of this Section 5. Again, can you comment on that? Has anybody been held accountable? And yet too, there should have been competitive bidding. It's a requirement that any project exceeding 500,000 rand, there should be a competitive bidding process. This did not occur. Why is that? And
all right.
What?
No, it's fine. I want him to. You seem to be drifting. I want him to respond to the first part of your concern before he gets buried in an avalanche of areas of concern.
Okay, sorry. I have only one more concern after this.
Because you see, the point that you are raising.
But Chair, you see, I'm getting, with respect,
sure,
the same kind of, and I feel very sorry for my colleague on my left, because I'm not too sure the root causes are all the same. This is all historical, so I'm, forgive me if I'm feeling a little, getting a bit, I don't know what.
No, I see and understand your frustration.
But I do understand the position of the National Commission as well.
Well, I don't. I must be honest. But
the project was awarded to the same people who did the needs assessment. Complete and utter contravention of this practice note. And I would love you to tell us somebody was held accountable for that.
Chair, at a very high level, my concern as the accounting officer as I speak, and take into account the points that you have mentioned on page 48, the breakdown of the quotation, 8 million, 8.6 for the software, and 12 or 13 million for the training. Certainly, no cost-benefit analysis done, flouting of principles of supply chain management. And once again, at the center of all these things is that the consultants running the show, but critically to this matter, is that there was no way that a 12 million implementation and training program could have been effected if you don't have a team of correctional services. Very clear. From where I'm sitting, it is impossible, because you're talking of a project of this magnitude wherein a certain amount of money is raised for training, and that was not done. So the question, the subsequent questions that you're raising, through you, Chair, is that the project in the manner in which it was awarded does also indicate a fraudulent process where in process here. There was no supply chain management. Anything in accordance to the supply chain management, treasury note, treasury regulation, PFMA, it says very clearly that anything above 500 should be attended. There was no tender. This was quotations. Now, I must submit here that this process that you talk in OpenView is a transversal contract that comes from CETA. And therefore, there was no oversight. And lack of leadership and accountability became a wholesale process in the department. So I can say very clearly that there could be no evidence that approval was granted for the deviation. All the processes that we're speaking about are processes that failed to the basic test of governance. So there were no governance processes at the time, and there was no adherence to the principles of accountability. So I must submit that it's something that money that was wasted.
This is another case, Chair, of financial mismanagement, because on the 2nd of April 2007, the full contract price was paid for this project. The full contract price. We are now in 2013, and this project has not yet been completed. Am I correct? We paid out the full amount long ago, 6 years ago.
Sure. Honestly, I must say here, the technology that was conceived then has changed, and that project, if we were to resuscitate, would not help us. It would be more costly. So it is lamentable, but we must admit that people will be held accountable for this.
Chair,
I think it brings what Cobridge Luan has been assigned to remind us every year. They need to look for those consultants that we may need to have a word with.
Bring them, yeah.
So they help us understand this kind of practice. So I hope our staff is noting some of these things. But I wanted to check with Comrade Chulan before you move on. Because you still have a section to deal with.
No, I don't. I'm finished. If there's time later on, I want to ask another question about public servants doing business with the department. But it's not part of this report, and I will keep that on the side if there is time and allow other members of Parliament to ask questions on this report. That's a completely new question, which I won't raise now.
No, that's fine. I will give it time. Now, before we make follow-ups, I just want to check with Comrade Chulan, because from what Comrade Roy has raised, I'm trying to check whether we're going to get different answers or we'll have the same answers. And maybe we need to get into a different discussion altogether. I just want to check with her and then I'll come back to you. Yes, Comrade.
Chairperson, for my own personal benefit, I want that when I knock off from work, I'll know that I have done something that I've been deployed for. On a lighter note, Chair, I'm not sure whether you're doing this deliberately, because since I started doing this report, I haven't found myself footing in this report. I'm always the second one, and when we try to get the response, I always get the same response. I'm hell-bound. I'm unable to pursue in terms of the response that we're getting from different departments, including this one. But there are some few items which I feel
So what are you suggesting?
No, Chairperson, I will...
We'll follow the program as set out and then come back to you later.
I'm not sure, but I think I'll just have about three questions that I'm going to raise, which I just...
Can I allow you to raise them now, and then we allow everybody to... Okay. So let's allow her to raise the two or three questions that she has, and then we can then allow everybody to come in. All right, continue, Comrade. Next time you will be the first one. No worries.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Commissioner spoke about the report in terms of this performance audit which was done in terms of their progress in relation to the consultants in the department. I just wanted to find out in the report if there are some ways to recoup or recommendations which were made by the consultant who were doing this report to recoup the money which were paid irregular in all the consultants which didn't provide the services which were supposed to be rendered to the department. Just to check on that one. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. We have indicated that we have both reports, the preliminary and the forensic investigation report by PwC, and I've indicated in this meeting that all the matters that are indicated in this report are being given attention by DC Legal, Mr. Zulu. But we have also indicated in this meeting that where criminal activity and failure to comply with the basic principles and monies be paid, we shall spare no effort to recover that amount of money. But we are in the process of getting a full legal opinion and the process that need to be followed. So indeed, it is our responsibility that the money that has not been properly spent that day should be brought back to the department.
Thank you, Chairperson, for that positive response. I'm going to I was assigned to deal with development of image turnaround campaign, media monitoring services, management development training program, and training interventions. Maybe I should start, Chair, on the last note at page 51. There are comments which were made by the chairperson of the portfolio committee oversighting over this department to check if whether these recommendations that were tabled to the department, how far are they in terms of implementing these recommendations? And in relation also, like we said, that this department is not for the first time that they are appearing before the committee in terms of the SCOPA resolutions, because some of the issues which were raised in terms of the non-compliance of the legislations, your supply chain management, your PFMA, what is the progress in terms of the status quo as to relation to this report? Thank you.
So we can confirm that the comments made by the Portfolio Committee on Correctional Services on issues elevated by the Auditor General have been escalated to a level. We are looking at them. And we're implementing as far as possible some of the recommendations that are put into us. But certainly, in these instances that we're talking about, it's non-compliance with the basic principles of accountability, supply chain management, national treasury, as well as PFMA. But we need to also re-emphasize here that the officials of the department under my care and leadership is that there should be a clear, transparent process of procurement in everything that we do in accordance with the law. And also what is key emanating from these recommendations is that there is monitoring and evaluation. At the core, I know and I can recall that in the portfolio committee meetings, issues that have been raised very critically with us is that we should have supply service level agreements in place, because that's one instrument of accountability of both the service provider and the department. Now, these are the issues that we tick the box on every relationship that we do with any other stakeholder outside the organization.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will zoom straight to item number 6 on the management development training, that is page 49, training program on the service provider who was appointed to provide training venues, accommodations, and meals. The tender which was awarded in December the 14th, 2007, at a value of 14.1 million. One neighbor just want to establish. I see here the consultant was Northwest University, Zwanaga Marketing and Management. The AG
is reporting that there was no evidence that the department conducted a cost-benefit, which Comrade Roy dwelt much on when he was first having the discussions with yourself. And that the other issue that is being raised is that the cost of the training venue, accommodation and meals was at actually 267%, more than the actual training cost on itself. I think it's a matter that we have an interest as this committee, even though we've exhausted all the questions, but this one I think would really want to hear the department, how does it put its sight. Thank you.
Chair, perhaps the twist in the response on this question is that the accounting officer and the minister will concur in his remarks somewhere. Correctional services has facilities, adequate facilities, for some of these things to happen in our own environment. I'm not sure on the rationale as to the choice of an outside venue. I have a moratorium as we speak that was issued in 2010-11 that most of our activities should take place in our facilities to minimize costs. Because colleagues, you'll remember, members of the portfolio committee, you'll remember that most of our facilities were built in the old days and they had some facilities that were meant to meet the department halfway. We have recreational centers, we have halls, we have places where we can have these things taking place. But certainly, in terms of, we have a training college also, two training colleges. One is Kroonstad and one is Onervater. Now, hindsight being a perfect science, one would have thought that such training at this magnitude should have taken in our own facilities. But it is important also that some training that is external, like EDP, could take place outside. One would have to go deeper to understand as to the type of projects that were earmarked for this. Because I have no inkling as to the cost of that amount that you have mentioned of 14 million as to the value that we might have derived at the time, which officials, what is it that over time we have been able to benefit. But I can confirm that I have, as we speak, various officials at very high level involved in EDP, Executive Development Programs, with higher institutions, and it's taking place in our own environment. So, ma'am, it is very difficult for me to go back in time as to the rationale, but the fact of the matter is that I would have opted to a situation where there is a rationalization of resources, value for money, and expansion of the thought leadership that it covers a number of people. 14 million for me is a very huge amount of money, but I'm unable at this point in time, but the report is also going to give us an opportunity to adjust some of these maladministration processes. But certainly I can indicate to yourselves that management development training is an essential tool of leadership being able to grapple with the issues of the current scenario. So at the time I cannot fault, but for me it is important that as we take our senior managers for higher level of training, we take into account the value for money component and transfer skills to your lower level.
Chairperson, yes, for some this, you see, the commissioner is really admitting, and you see, if somebody is admitting to the faults of a department, it really makes it difficult. But to go on and pursue, to say that, no, I'm hanging you, or I'm sending you straight to jail, commissioner. But you see, like he has previously said, that the department was a house for consultants, and it really shows. Then, Chair, I will go back to reiterate so that it gets recorded that as this committee, we should take note of these consultants who have been getting money, state money, people's money, and just do nothing in terms of assisting the departments. Because, Chair, we have a situation, I still want to repeat this one, we have a situation where government or our state departments are being seen as the one that are misusing money. But you have consultants who are operating on a private sector basis who will just come into departments to say that, you know, we're just going to source money and we'll charge more. And if you've got a cost of training that will escalate to a minimum or a maximum of 267%, then that is anomaly. It's a situation that we cannot really say that we're going to sit with it. So I'm just reiterating that we really need to take note of all these consultants at a particular time, even though it might not be us, but maybe we need to make a recommendation that the incoming scoper after 2014 will have to sit down and look how do we deal with consultants, as much as we're admitting that consultants have to be there, but we have to ensure that public money is spent correctly. But on that one, on that note, Chairperson, just one more last question, Commissioner. It's on the training intervention. On this one, I don't know if the Commissioner will say otherwise, because I believe the officials who are supposed to be trained, some of them are still in the department. There were trainings which were arranged for officials, and some of the officials didn't even bother to attend those trainings. Some of them couldn't even bother to submit portfolio of evidence, or they could have failed, and I believe they are still there. And it's something that you'll say you'll want to, Commissioner, this one you're not going to justify it. Can you talk on that one? Thank you.
Chairperson, I can proudly say that perhaps in reverse, all my executive members, everybody who goes for any course, that is a clause which I'll read here. Please take note that if you accept this nomination, it will be expected of you to attend the course. If after accepting the nomination or an unforeseen circumstance makes it impossible to attend the above mentioned course, you must inform the HRD manager and your HR support at least 2 working days prior to your scheduled start date in writing. Should you not attend or withdraw, indicate that you cannot attend the courses less than 48 hours before the course commences, the department shall be debited with the cost, and you shall be personally held liable for the opportunity cost resulting thereof. Now, I'm saying this, Chair, mindful of the fact that this has been an anomaly, people not held accountable, department spending money. And I also want to respond directly to the question that you have raised of the officials that were mentioned in this report. A total of 704 officials went for management development program and middlement. Those who were competent were 579. Did not submit all assignments were 91. Submitted assessment but not declared competent 13. Did not attend 21. Now, that in itself is a clear indication that there was no accountability. People will register for expedient reasons and later not attend courses. The clause that I've mentioned here, it holds the head of the branch accountable, the official himself or herself, that there shall be no way that you register for a course that is not going to be completed. But what is key and clear here is that if you fail to attend, as is the instance of 21, I've already interacted with the DC legal, although the matter is predated, to see as to whether there's money that has been used by the department and there's been no value for it. It is easy for us to gloat and say this is what we're doing, but officials need to know that there are consequences. And hence we crafted that clause in order for us to be able to be holding officials accountable. The EDP and MDP programs that are taking place, all officials who attend those classes, they receive an SMS at every time that they should submit. So that they cannot claim ignorance that assignments are being submitted. So on this matter, much as it is an issue that happened in the past, we have taken lessons from that officials should be held accountable and the department should be able to recover the costs for people for failing to attend the courses and completing them. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope, Commissioner, some of these officials have not been elevated or promoted to
senior management positions, because if they have been, even advice would say the department should reconsider, because then how would you get promoted? Probably some of them are now in senior positions, but they could not even submit an assignment. It's something that is easy even as a member of parliament. If there's a class that I'm attending, I will struggle to know that an assignment due date is here today, I must submit. So that it helps on in terms of capacity improvement, in terms of me doing my work properly, and knowing that money is being paid to. Probably, I think, a commissioner, the other thing that we should, the department should do is to say, if a person fails, should pay back the department. That's what we do as members of parliament. If there's a course that is being paid by parliament, if you don't, you're not going to finish that course, you must pay that money in full. I think it's something that you should do in that clause that you just read, commissioner. People should pay back. People should not be thanked for something that they didn't do. Like I'm saying, maybe if you could check with your sort of audit check in terms of your senior staff, because people get elevated. I'm sure one of them, out of these 379, there is one that has been promoted or elevated. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right. Okay. Dr. George Singh Maluleg Hose Way. And then, so. All right. We'll start with Dr. George.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to know, I see there's an acting CFO. Why is there an acting CFO? It's related to the next question. Thanks, Chair.
There is an acting CFO as from December 2012. The previous CFO moved to defense. The post of the CFO has been advertised as quickly, because we do not want to have a vacancy on this strategic position, and sooner we shall be having interviews.
Thank you, Chairperson. My next question relates to the process of managing the consultants. Now, I say this in every committee, is very basically is that you need financial procedures in place and they need to be managed. Then you need to have a functional internal audit committee, and then you need to internal audit function, and then you need to have an audit committee. They work together, and then you send out a set of financials that make sense when they get audited. Now, when you are engaging with consultants, is there a process, for example, terms of engagement with consultants? Because we see it all the time, that it appears as if the government departments are not necessarily ready to receive the consultant. The consultant then comes along and says, well, let me just add on a little bit more and keep charging you, and once you're in it, you just can't get out of it. So how do you actually manage that process? And that's, I think, why I was asking about the acting CFO. So I'd like to understand, is there such a thing? Because in a way, and we've discussed this before, Chairperson, in this committee, is that we must also look at the consultants, because the consultants have a responsibility when they are engaging with a department. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Dr. George. Can we respond to the question? Then we'll come to you, Honorable Singh.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks for the question. The process of managing consultants has been a challenge in the past, but we can assure this committee, having created a very high-level leadership, that we do have an internal audit at a very high level. We do have an audit committee that is functional. The terms of reference when you engage a consultant have to be very clear as to the outcomes that you want to get. And I can assure the committee here that all the consultants and the service providers that we engage with, we do have the clear terms of reference that are in line in order for us to be able to achieve the intended objective. We do have that. We have a process that is followed. Risks, mitigation, assessment of what is it that we want to achieve in the process of engaging the service provider and a consultant,
okay,
those are put in place.
Okay. See?
President, I had one final question.
Okay.
Very short.
All right.
I just wanted to get clarity on this term juniorized, because I've heard it a couple of times in this committee, but the way I understand it is that it's almost like a delegation to a level below which it shouldn't be delegated, and therefore it's an irregular delegation. What actually does juniorized mean? Thank you.
I'll give an example. Chair, with your permission, I'll give an example. With an issue of open view project that we have here, there is no way at the level of technical expertise and the technical specifications that you want to achieve, you'll give that type of a job to your DD at the lowest level. It is a duty and a function that must be escalated at the technical level that is requisite to the person who is providing the technical specifications for the outcome that is required. Now, if you generalize it, the outcomes are such that they will not be aligned to the outcome that you need to get. That's my definition of juniorization. All you need to do in the process is that your junior official should be of fair with the terms of reference, so that in the event that is a process of monitoring and evaluation, they are also part and parcel. But you cannot sub-delegate a very critical position or activity to your junior officials. Much as you want to empower them, but you should be able to provide leadership.
All right.
Thank you, Chair. I get the definition. But I think the crux is somebody delegated it to a level below which it should not have been delegated, if I'm understanding it correctly. And if the quick answer is yes, then who is that person? And then, of course, what was done about it? Thank you, Chair.
If we're referring to IT sphere, it is very clear for me that because we do not have senior leadership in IT, the person who was leading IT at the time was the chief director. Was the chief director. And the people below that person were at DD and director level. And it is important, therefore, to see that the issue that we indicated of the disparity of knowledge management would also have an impact in terms of reference that were going to be given to the consultant.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'd just like to make the one point which I think I make always on consultants and auditor, is that if you look at this report, the Auditor General has reported 2.036 billion RON as a total expenditure on consultants for the 3-year period, 2 billion. But they've only done a sample audit of about 10.5% to the value of 214 million. So what they've reported here, Commissioner, is just a sample audit. What I'd like to know is subsequent to this report, and also bearing in mind that when they use the word consultants, it's not warm bodies only, like we've been talking about for the last hour, and thank you to our colleagues for the lead question. But it's consulting professional services, it is contractors, and it's agency and outsource services. It's a package, not just people. So the question I want to know is, subsequent to this report, have you, Commissioner, and your department made out a complete list of this 2.36 billion RON worth of these services that were outsourced, et cetera, and made that available to the portfolio committee at least, so that they can pursue the other 1.8 billion RON worth of services, contracts, consultancies that have been appointed that are not mentioned in this report? So that's my first question, if that has been done, and if not, you know, why has it not been done, and I think it should be done. The second question, Chairperson, is...
No, maybe let's deal with the...
Okay, question. All right, thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. On the 15th of February, at 1000 hours, I met with the Deputy Auditor General in his office. The discussion was about the use of consultants and the report that they've issued. And I must indicate that there was a meeting of minds and there was a concurrence on the report that he has issued with us. There were areas where I sought clarity with the Deputy Auditor General, and I'm pleased to report that after that meeting, I requested a breakdown because 2 billion for me, as the Auditor General would allude here, was something that I could not think of as to how we arrived at 2 billion. But the definition that has been provided is service providers, contractors, and what have you. Within a week, the Auditor General's office supplied me with a file of evidence, which I did receive and cascaded to my two senior officials, the acting CFO and CITO. I can confirm here that we've been able to do a filtering process and categorization of the areas of the expenditure of the 2 billion. I can also indicate here that I have not shared with the portfolio committee because this was done a week ago, 2 weeks ago, and that we'll share. We have a list. There is a printout. Bear in mind, in the list that we receive from the Auditor General, its items, some are 6,000 lines, and therefore what we have done for purposes of able to follow, we have condensed this report in terms of heads of items, nutrition, health, services, all those items have been categorized, which will comprise, if you add them backwards, 2 billion, including IT. So we do have that. I had instructed my two officials that I want to have a compact, clear picture of the roadmap that leads us to this particular amount of money. So we can confirm that much as there might be discrepancies here, the 2 billion is a true reflection of what the Auditor General has indicated. But it's not purely technically IT warm bodies as consultants, because that was the difficulty that we had. But after having unpacked that with him, it was very clear that it was other components that make that. But be as it may, I must hasten to indicate the other components which are not warm bodies, these are core and critical for us to run the department. This is not money wasted. There was value for money on most of the issues that are mentioned by the Auditor General.
Yeah, no, I think the mention of 2 billion does not suggest that there has been 2 billion rands wasted. It merely says out of those contracts, was there value for money? But beyond value for money, was there due process? Because value for money is not enough on its own. Was there due process? And I suppose that is the next phase of what you are supposed to be doing with that long list in terms of checking value for money and due process.
Thank you, Chair. I trust the Portfolio Committee will follow up on those items, because one name comes to mind for a number of years that I'm sitting here is Bosasa. And I never heard Bosasa, I never saw Bosasa mentioned or anything anywhere. So I think Portfolio Committee can pursue that, because they are also contractors to the department. Chairperson, my second question is, you know, I think this is an appropriate statement for correctional services. To set a thief, to catch a thief. And I think, but they put the thief in jail. What I can't understand, Chair, is on page 46, where they had consultants appointed to manage other consultants. Now, that's just like set a thief to catch a thief, right? Now, is that situation still pertaining in the department now, Commissioner, where you've got one consultant monitoring another consultant? If you can just tell us what the situation is in that regard. Thanks. And then I'll ask my last question after.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. I want to highlight that for us to be able to reach this milestone of doing an investigation, we needed to have a consultant. That's one positive aspect of it, because the matter was far beyond. We didn't want to have a restriction in terms of having an assessment of the irregularities, the flouting of PFMA. In this instance, we did have a consultant that was brought into action by myself. But we don't have a situation per se in the department wherein consultant runs a consultant. We also want to indicate that after the whole reduction of consultants in our environment, an appointment of the GTO at the highest level, so we have not had a situation where consultants run other consultants. But I must hasten to point out that prior to the GTO being appointed as the head of the department, for me as the accounting officer to have an understanding globally of the process, I had to appoint a consultant. That I want to admit here. So that he does an audit of all the consultants, because everybody at the lower level was junior. So I needed to have a sense as to who is who in the zoo, what processes and what they were doing. But as we speak, we don't have consultants running the department. It is us running the department.
All right. No, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I think Koshi is waiting to follow up on that later on. I won't pursue that. But the last question relates to page 142, because we've been hearing about consultants, you know, we're reducing the amount of use of consultants and things like that. Now, during the term of office of the current commissioner, if you note on page 142, you will see consultants, contractors, and agency outsourced services 5.3 chair, right on the top. Now, if you look at from 2010 to 11, to 11-12, under business and advisory services, there's an increase from 24 million to 60 million, the 40 million rand increase in the use of consultants for business and advisory services. Can we be told what that was for? And secondly, under contractors, it was 44 million in 10-11, it's now 140 million, so that's 100 million more. Why, how has that come about? And then lastly, well, agency and outsource is not a very big increase. It's only 24 million in relation to the 40 million.
It's not a big increase of a large amount.
Percentage-wise, yeah. It's a small. But there's an increase during this term, 11-12. Can we just be told why, Commissioner? Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I might not have the full answer here with respect to the two items, business and advisory services and contractors per se. I'll have to go to my notes in terms of the dissection of the information that we have here. But certainly this was not, in terms of contractors in particular, we had in 2010-2011 a number of contractors in our environment, mainly in facilities. And those facilities, we needed to have contractors dealing with the facilities in the Western Cape, Van Rensdorp, Varenbergveld, and Bramfleet.
Doing what?
It's the completion of a correctional facility that had been started by 2009 and which had not been completed, so we wanted to fast-track those processes. Now, with respect to business and advisory services...
You mean that the buildings were not completed?
Yes,
you wanted to fast track the process.
We needed to have the process fast tracked so that the facilities.
What would fast tracking mean? I mean, you appoint a contractor to build a prison, and this guy is not completing it, so you want to fast track it. What do you do?
Additional staff on the ground, which means more hands in order for us to be able to complete that process.
You mean additional staff for the contractor?
Which means, therefore, they need to have additional overheads for themselves. There's a cost element here. Bear in mind, Chairperson, these projects were conceived, I don't like to use the BMT factor. Yes, it may. The matter is that this contract had come to a grinding halt. They're not moving at the speed with which, and it's a matter that the Portfolio Committee has raised with us at ad infinitum.
Fine. I'm trying to understand that you want to build a prison. People bid, I can build, and then you grant the contract to Ubabundlu. He says, I can build. Pay me 10 million. I'll build this prison. And then he's not building it. Now you want to fast track. You want to assist him. What does this mean? Does this mean that the contract was given to somebody who didn't have capacity? That's what it means. And now this guy has no capacity, and now the department must come in and assist that guy. What kind of assistance do you give him?
Sure, let me put it this way. In situation exactly on this matter, bear in mind the contract is running, and the ability to complete the project on time has not been met, And I also want to admit,
why was it not? I mean, in my mind comes the AGIS report on infrastructure in health and education, where we find that people are given contracts to build schools and hospitals who have no capacity whatsoever. And it raises the specter of people having been given contracts without following due processes. Otherwise, it would not have happened that a person with no capacity wins a contract to build a prison and fails to deliver.
Well, I think the whole construction and contracts management lie with public works. And therefore, it is very clear that when these things were escalated and wanted, so there was cost associated with the increase of the scope, and therefore public works is responsible. These are the issues, no service level agreements that existed in the past, and we can confirm that it took a long time for service level agreement to be signed between the department and public works. And an issue that was raised by the portfolio committee, and these are the issues that have been reneging. And therefore, based on this particular lack of oversight and project management, the cost will increase. And we find ourselves in a situation wherein we could not have projects that are incomplete.
All right. Okay,
just to follow up very briefly on that one, Chair, because as you said, on page 154 of the annual report, right on top, 26, there's public-private partnerships and contracts to manage maximum security correctional services. They won't be part of the 2 billion because the 2 billion refers to another financial year.
Yeah.
But are these also, you know, would they fall under the broad category of use of consultants? And to what extent is this happening? And I know we can't get the details, but possibly something for the portfolio committee to follow up.
Yeah, no, maybe let us pass that one and hope that the portfolio committee will pursue that, and or when we ourselves decide on our program, if we decide that on the annual reports must deal with correctional services, then I'm sure we'll be able to then go into the details of some of these issues. Malek, and then Hoshi, Wenya, and then Self, and then I'll come back to the other complaints.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, when you are almost at the last to ask questions, you are at a disadvantage point. But I want to start by commending the department for putting systems in place to ensure that the mistakes of the past are not repeated. Because consultants were in charge of the department and officials were taken on holidays. Because if more money is paid for accommodation and food and less on training, that means the officials are on holidays. That's why there were so many that failed. But my question would be that those who accepted the nomination of going for a training, were they disciplined? Because I feel even now that they should be subjected to disciplinary action. That's my first question.
Thanks, Chair. We have done all the work, as I've indicated the statistics here, that we are able to account for those who have failed to attend. But I must admit, in the absence of a clause of the nature that we spoke about here and lack of oversight, we are yet to be advised by legal as to what measures we need to put in place. Upon seeing that officials are flouting processes of training and they're not adhering to what they have requested, we therefore put in place a clause that holds them accountable. But that does not preclude that we cannot hold them accountable. Measures will be put in place for the 21 who have failed to attend and those who have failed to submit their assignments. So I can confirm here that we'll put everything possible in order for us to address this behavior that is negative, because it's taxpayers' money and we wanted people to have personal development capability within their sphere.
All right.
You are saying 21, according to AGIS report, it's 114 those who didn't attend. It's a big number. Just take care of that one. According to AGIS...
Well, no. Take care does not suffice. I mean, how do we have the discrepancy between 21 and 100 and something? I mean, the age he gets his records from the department?
Permission check, may I ask the HR official with your permission?
Chairperson, thank you. The figures that were submitted to the AG in terms of the report that we've received would certainly not be in correspondence with the figures that are here, because certainly the ones that we have are indicating a far less number of people, because you've got 91 people plus 13 plus 21 that if collectively you look at them as having not completed the assessment, because 91 of them did not submit assessments and therefore were not qualified, did not go through to, because if you don't submit your assessments, therefore you are not eligible to then go through for assessment. 13 of them submitted assignments which were found not to be at the required level for them to also be deemed competent.
All right, so there is no contradiction in terms of the overall number. Okay, continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. I still need to know what is this turnaround campaign which was provided by the communications firm. What is it? Then was there any value for money for that? Thank you.
Chairperson, with respect to the turnaround image turnaround campaign, I was on record on joining the department later, trying to understand as to what is image turnaround strategy is all about. And I'm here to have a document that gives me direction as to what is it actually that they wanted to achieve. Because a turnaround image can be done within the department with the sources at the disposal, having a clear communication strategy. Flatly speaking, I'm unable to refer to what the intention was with this particular strategy.
So it was just a way of giving out money, doling out money. All right? No, that's fine. I'm just saying, look, let's not waste time around things that clearly indicate that. I mean, it's like media monitoring services. 1 million, 1.8 million per month just to provide media monitoring, analysis, and advisory service for media service unit in the department. To provide training and skills transfer, but there were no officials. So you say, train our officials, transfer skills, but then you have no officials. I mean, to just read the Sowetan and the New Age and cut reports, stories, and then you're paid 1.8 million. I mean, really.
And in addition to that, Chairperson, in addition to that, you are paid 66,980 more than the original fellow.
All right. No, that's fine. Hush.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think I must confess that for the first time, an attempt to address Section 38 of PFMA was made today here. Except to say that attempt should be, you know, elevated to evidence. We were told that several officials and consultancy have been subjected for disciplinary actions. May we then have a list of officials that, in line with this, you know, statements are, you know, complying to say, indeed, these are the list of officials that are undergoing discipline. And if Chairperson, you agree with me in that regard, can we have that list by next week, which will include the category of consultancy that the department has, you know, instituted some investigations to them on the basis of, you know, some doubts that they were ripping the department without properly
and then due process has been followed in terms of their performance. Can we have those lists if possible?
Chairperson, we confirm categorically here that the list of officials subjected to disciplinary process will be provided yourself. The list of consultants who are involved in the process will be provided yourself, and the areas in which maladministration, let me put it, perceived maladministration as per report, will be provided to yourselves. I can also hasten to say that even before the end of this week, but next week is acceptable, but we do have that in our possession. Thanks.
Before we continue, my only challenge, Comrade Minister, is that it does look like communicating with the department can be, you know, on a very slow motion. So we would want that communication with our staff should be smoothed, so that we don't have to bang doors to get, you know, responses or documentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. The second part, it's a follow-up of my colleague behind me. Consultancy, monitoring consultancy in the department. Fine, that statement, it sounds good. But let's get it here, Chair. What informed the department leading to the appointment of consultants? Because that alone, Chair, it then draw what we call evaluation upfront. You said, I'm employing these people to do for me 1, 2, 3, 4. Which then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 becomes your checklist. You don't need somebody who wasn't, you know, responsible for, you know, hiring this contractor to come and do your checklist of something they don't know. Are you then saying to me, this consultancy, somebody was just waking up, having a nice morning, and just saying, now today I want consultants. Five, they must come in. One should then become the overseer of the other. Is it how things were run by the department? If one has to understand it properly.
Based on the evidence and the report that you have tabled to yourselves, it is very clear that there was no capability within the department to do an assessment of its own needs. The coming into being of consultants in correctional services
Commissioner, I distinctly remember that since I became chair of this committee, we have met with the department on numerous occasions, and at every occasion that we met, there was very energetic and strong assertions, almost like you are doing today, that everything is under control, everything is fine. And yet, year in and year out, the report of the Auditor General will just show the opposite. And this performance audit actually confirms the worst of the excess. So, I hear you. I'm just listening with a heavy heart, because it's not like we're discussing these things for the first time. And all the people who were sitting in your position all made commitments about doing the right things. I think since morning, that's my frustration sitting here. And hoping that once you have left, 5 years down the line, we will not find anything that will say, during your era, this is what was happening. I think I'm just expressing my frustrations aloud.
Chairperson, maybe I was taking them, with a slow journey towards that.
Okay.
Because after today, when I started by saying, for the first time I was, you know, given impression that PFMAEA is taken on board. But on the contrary, you just turn here and come to the annual, report. Why then the qualified report? If what we were told that we hired this, and then this is what we have been putting in place, why qualified report then? Under review.
Now, I think this one is easy because it's you know, you knowing and understanding why you are in the qualified report now.
Chair, I take your point very, very strongly and the comments made by the member of the committee here. I just want to indicate that there is evidentiary proof and all efforts and intention, not just goodwill. We have demonstrated here that the numbers and the ability to reduce the incidence of consultants in correctional services is something that we have dealt with. When I painted a picture of 183, which is a reality, and the level at which we are is not just a talk, it's a reality. Because one would understand that in an environment where in IT was not given its due attention and prominence to deal with the matters of communication in this IT communication, we're not patting ourselves on the back for the sake of the glory in which we have. It's about dealing with the problems that are there and are came in government departments. And this is an issue that has been raised by the Auditor General in the previous years. And therefore, we needed to show cause that we deal with this matter decisively. Now, reducing 183 to 30, to the number that I've indicated.
No, I think Chair, yes. That is, it sounds good. That's what makes me to say, at least today somebody was addressing my concern. But I'm saying, after addressing these concerns, why straightforward to, you know, qualified opinion of the AG in the under review, you know, report?
The qualification of the Department of Correctional Services for the past 18 years perhaps has its own trajectory.
Or maybe, Nehush, let's do this. Because I suspect when we deal with our program after Good Friday, we may or may not decide to say let's deal with this. So maybe let's not go into the detail. I know you must go and see a doctor. You're not healthy. It's all right. You can go. No, it's Comrade Ngwenya and then some.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the invitation to come to your committee. Chair, my follow-up question is based on the first presentation, number two, visualization project. And the second one is going to number five on the media monitoring service. Chairperson, there was a project which started in February 2009 on visualization for an amount of 11.7 million. The Audit General found that this project was not completed and by January 2012. It might, Chairperson, maybe you are repeating, but I wanted to be clear on this question. I would like to know what was the time frame from this project and whether this project has been completed as stated or not. And Chairperson, I would like to know why the department was not represented on the BID evaluation committee for this project and who drafted the tender document for this project, Chairperson. And before I go to the second question, Chairperson, on the second presentation, I would like to get an answer from this. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. The virtualization project of 11.7 million was not completed. It's a software process that was being acquired, and we have indicated that the BID evaluation committee was comprising of consultants, and therefore there was no oversight and governance processes in the department at the time. Because by so doing, it therefore opened the floodgates for consultants doing what they wanted to do. But clearly, if you look at this and the skewedness that I've indicated in terms of consultants running the department, the drafting of the tender document certainly in this instance was done by the consultants themselves. So the terms and the conditions and whatever specifications that came through was at the behest of those who are at the leadership. Now, I have indicated here, Chairperson, that at the time there was no leadership. It was a deputy commissioner. At the lowest level, it was a chief director.
But there was overall leadership in the department.
Yeah.
There was a national commissioner, and there were a whole host of other senior leaders. Ms. Mareka has always been part of the delegation, as part of the leadership, and a whole host of others. So it might as well be that at that point, at that junior, that person was responding to a chain that led to the national commissioner or whoever was acting at that time.
Chairperson, you'd agree with me. I will not be privy as to the type of command structure that permeated in terms of oversight of projects. But certainly what I'm talking to this particular project, indeed, of course, the National Commissioner and somebody at the top ought to have known what is happening with respect to a very strategic project of this nature.
Sure.
But I'm unable
because
to put myself...
Because commission, it's not junior officials who conceive projects and then decide to issue out tenders. It's not junior officials who do that. The leadership of the department that says, you know what, these are the things we need to be able to run the department, and then decide who should do what. And I would imagine there has to be a way in which reports are cascaded, not downwards, but upwards, from whoever has been delegated at the junior level, right up to those who are responsible or in charge. So I don't think that the department would have operated in any way very, very different from how it's operating under your command. I'm trying to remove the element of ignorance on the part of the leadership of what was happening. The element related to that, I'll raise it towards the end.
All right, continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, maybe because even Correctional Service Portfolio Committee, they were not yet calling the department to discuss about this document. Most of what I was saying in terms of this project, we're still going to deal with it on Correctional Service Portfolio Committee. Chairperson, I wanted to go to my second question on the media. Chair, the department has spent $1.9 million on Onika Media Information for a media monitoring services project between 2006 and 2008. Now, Chair, can the department tell us what was this project all about? Why was there a need for such service? Two, Chair, has the department achieved its objectives from this project? Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, once again, media monitoring, you have said it very clearly. There was no need for us to have a media monitoring services. If you look back at 2006 to 2010, the amount that abandoned $1.8 million per month for 24 months, there was a total lack of vision and lack of commitment in respect to this matter. Because I must say and confirm that for me it was a superfluous process of having consultants and other services that which we could have done ourselves, properly using our own staff in the communication sphere. All that could have been done in this particular instance, if I was at the helm of the organization then, is to beef up your communication team, especially for the image of the organization can be best done by those who are within the organization. A consultant could have been brought perhaps on one small component in terms of certain skills of nuances in terms of the image of the organization. But I sincerely believe that you best communicate yourself and be able to speak about yourself by not using any other person to speak about the gains and the results that you earn yourself.
Normally, I would have read all the newspapers by 7:30 every morning. Anyway, I don't know what the monitoring is.
Not true.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you from the Commissioner for the response. I don't have any questions.
Okay. So, and then I'll take you for
yes, round of thank you very much indeed. I have two and possibly three questions to ask. The first is that I'm delighted that the National Commissioner will take disciplinary action against officials that are implicated in wrongdoing, but I think he would agree that many of the officials are long gone and are now in other departments or in the private sector all over the place. Is it possible to bring those people to account who've left the department? If not, what other alternative steps is one going to take? That's my first question, Chair.
Chairperson, firstly, let me indicate that the head of IT at the time, perhaps if you allow me not to mention the name, if you do, it's your prerogative.
No, do mention. I mean, these people are employed by government to provide public services. So, I mean, to say so and so was, I'm sure they are proud of the work they did. So, praise them.
The head of IT at the time was Mr. Shulubani. He ran the IT, and therefore, just when we started the process of investigation, he was about to tender his resignation, which I refused at the time because the process, I wanted him to be accountable for the alleged misdemeanors as per the report of the Auditor General. A process and the charges were pressed against him, and therefore the process is still continuing. He left the organization. I sincerely believe...
He left nonetheless.
He left nonetheless. I sincerely believe that...
what happened? I mean, you refused, so he just walked away.
Yes, he left. But we need to indicate here that I don't believe that after leaving a public service, you are immune. I'm not sure. I need to be... you are immune from the processes of following up on things that you are accountable for. Because we're not talking small change here. We're talking about issues that I, as the accounting officer, must account for. And I don't think it is fair that I should be accountable for things that I have not done and sit to be grilled on matters that, on oversight, they could have been done better. And it is important, therefore, that if we are taking ownership and accountability, we should take it to a high level. I sincerely believe that once we took that process and the information and the advice that I have from the legal unit, it is possible for us to pursue because it's state funds under my care. And therefore, it is important also that those who are responsible for the processes that were under their command and control and their oversight, they should at one point or the other. Because otherwise, I would walk out and having left a process and a problem behind, and nobody is accountable.
Okay.
And I would like that this matter be dealt with in the matter in which we see it.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well.
Thank you, Chair. Naren Singh earlier spoke about the fact that we were dealing with only a fraction of the amount in question, this audit. And you, Commissioner, referred earlier to the elephant in the room as being CETA. I would venture to suggest there are other companies that are elephants in the room that aren't covered by this audit at all. I mean, just one of them that I'd like to refer to is the company Sondola IT, which was responsible for the erection of 72 control rooms, none of which are working at the moment, none of which are working. And now, in order to deal with the situation, the department has appointed a consultant to advise them about how to deal with another consultant's failed job, who in turn, I understand, has appointed a transactional advisor. So my point is simply this. When you get a situation where the service is manifestly not provided, as was presumably the case with RDOMs, as is the case with the control rooms, what steps are taken to act against the companies involved to recover money from those companies?
Chair, the Mr. Self would agree with me that when we met with the Portfolio Committee in our last engagement, in the presence of CETA, we're very clear that there are things that we're not going to pay. We're very categoric about it. And we did not spare any effort to say in public that this we're not going to pay because there is no fight of evidence. Because it's easy to claim payment for something that I, as accounting officer and my team, are unable to account for. Now, I'm saying in respect to things that we can be able to have traces of accountability and evidence that services have been provided, the process, the due processes in accordance with the supply chain processes have been followed, we will pay. I'm bringing this word to contextualize before SCOPA that we had a discussion here wherein correctional services were said not to be paying certain amounts of money for service providers. And we were saying here, under our care, we'll only pay for services that we can account for. But it is very clear, Chairperson, that in the command structure and the leadership that we had, there were things that were not followed. Hence, you saw consultants comprising themselves in a BEAT evaluation committee and taking decisions on behalf of the department. Be as it may, we are not going to perpetuate a situation wherein we, as the current leadership, will sit and fold our arms and say we will allow things to follow the same route. We are saying here, in respect to what you have said here of Sondolo IT, my JITO here and I, we are saying we need to do an assessment. We are doing an assessment as to why these are not working. But I can recall very vividly in 2010 when I joined the department that I was told that I should reconnect. Am I right, Mandy? I need to reconnect some of the control rooms. Being a novice in that field, I did not understand what is it that I'm being advised to reconnect. Now, it's a contradiction. We as department, we seek services for certain activities to take place in order to help us. But we're the first one to decommission. We are the ones who decommissioned the closure of the control rooms, precisely because we did not have the requisite staff. What I'm saying, Chair, is that you say, I want to have a control room for this and that, for a good purpose. But it's not the consultant who is going to run the project for you. The consultant will be there to say, this project works in this and that manner. And therefore, train your people so that when they leave your environment, you can continue in terms of the vision that you have set for the process to take its course. In this particular instance, seemingly we did not have people trained. The issue of people being trained in our environment to perpetuate or to continue sustainability of projects was something that was not dealt effectively and efficiently. And therefore, you cannot have control rooms without people manning them. And hence, they had to be switched off. When this matter was raised with me to connect, the question that I raised is, why do we want to recommission? Because in any technical issue, when you mothball a power station, to reconnect, the costs are higher, because the equipment has been standing idle for years or for months. So the same applies to our control rooms. So I'm saying...
Are you saying, therefore, that the erection of the control rooms has actually been a wasteful expenditure?
What I'm saying, yes, because it has to be in the context that the department did not do what is expected. Once I request a service provider to do a clearly identified project, I should have people to man that project. So we ended up with Sondolo IT for a long time running our control rooms because they didn't want their equipment to go into disuse. So we cannot hold them accountable for something that they themselves knew that they are training our people. We failed to provide human bodies. What do you call means of habeas corpus? We didn't. The body was not there. And therefore, at times you need to switch the processes. Did the department properly plan in order for it to be able to sustain the project? In this instance, Sondolo did deliver. But we failed in terms of providing the human capability to run the project and to be commissioned.
One final question, Chair. In that circumstance, you were big enough to say we didn't provide it, but it wasn't you who didn't provide it. Who was responsible for taking that decision, and what has happened to the person or people that took that decision or failed to take the right management decision that resulted in wasteful expenditure?
like I've said repeatedly, we'll follow the due processes as we have done in any project. Do an assessment, audit, and then follow the due processes as to what needs to be done. I'm not trying to be vague here, because what is important here is for us to be able to have an assessment of the conditions under which people operated. And for me, it's an indictment on us, a leadership perspective, that we need to be accountable for what we do.
But I'm sure that in terms of the PFM, if Pete Hoshi has left, the National Commissioner bears ultimate responsibility for everything that happens. But I do understand in your approach. Fine, we had a National Commissioner, but he had a management team, or she had a management team, and had specific officials who were, you know, tasked with the responsibility of overseeing certain things. But broadly, Honorable Self, the buck stops with the National Commissioner at that time, in terms of the PFMA. That's the person who has the legal responsibility and obligation to ensure that there are controls in place to avoid wasteful expenditure. All right, I'll give I'll start with Comrade Vincent, and I'll lean backwards a bit. You have been listening for quite some time. No, I'm leaning backwards. I'm heading over to you.
No, thanks, Chair. Chair, I want to start with the point that you closed with. The ultimate authority resting with the National Commissioner. And I want to link that to a question that was raised by one of my colleagues about what are you doing about those officials who were supposed to go on training, didn't go on training, and we spent money. And you said that you need to concur with your legal team. I'm arguing that there is no need to concur with the legal team. Because the PFMA says that the accounting officer has a duty to recover fruitless, wasteful, or fruitless.
Just wait until that phone is off.
Oh, Magakula, you're coming in.
We said switch off your cellular phones because, you see, that's what it does. And for as long as it's making that noise, whatever it's saying is not being recorded.
Chair, I was saying, Chair, that I'm arguing that there's no need for a legal opinion because the law says that the accounting officer must recoup fruitless, wasteful, or irregular expenditure. The law says that. And it goes further. It says that if the accounting officer doesn't do that, he or she is liable. If they don't comply with that act, they are liable. So I do think, Chair, that Commissioner, because he's the accounting officer, must insist that those people pay back unless they have a solid reason why not. Like all of us, I come with a doctor's letter or a death certificate. I don't think we need to go to the legal department of correctional services. We must put the ball in their court to prove why they shouldn't. So that, I just wanted to get to that point. But I want to talk to National Treasury, Chair, because they're sitting here, and I'm not sure what their role has been all along. But National Treasury, according to the Public Finance Management Act, also has a responsibility to ensure effective management of expenditure and so on. You also have that responsibility as National Treasury to enforce transparency. And I'm wondering, what have you been doing when these things have been happening? Because, Chair, I'm not absolving the department, but I think National Treasury has a role to play. They've got a accounting officer, and now we're going to get a chief procurement somebody. It's no use that we have those people at National Treasury as a government department sits here and doesn't answer to what it is that they are doing incorrectly. So my question, Chair, is, and I'll come back to the department, in light of all these things that have happened, what has National Treasury's role been up to now, if any? I'd like a response to that question.
Chair, I'll respond to the issue of...
We would want to hear from National Treasurer first. You know these challenges around correctional services. What has been your role or intervention or advice?
As the National Commissioner has indicated, the National Treasury is supporting the Department of Correctional Services to try to right these wrongs so that the process that the National Treasury is doing together with the National...
But where was National Treasury when these wrongs were committed? I think that's the point. Mindful of the fact that National Treasury does not run departments, but we're just saying, is there any proactive role that you play without being reactive?
Unfortunately, Chairperson, is that we only know through the annual report and the audit report that something has gone wrong. We are not in a way in a position to know before the reports are out. So that's why I say after the report we follow up.
Is there no way in which you monitor or you get information about expenditure from departments in here that would give you a sense of how transactions have been made and, you know, and you're able to evaluate or that kind of thing?
The monthly report that we get will say so much has been spent on personnel, on IT, or infrastructure. But it does not provide whether the due process has been followed, whether there was governance, etc. So we don't have that system in place. That's why we only become aware when through the annual report and that something has gone. Otherwise, the monthly report that we get is just a global expenditure figures, not the detailed. That so and so, for example, was appointed without following the due process. We don't have that system in place. Yes, we have a system in place whereby the department deviated from following the procedure. They report to the supply chain management section in National Treasury. Otherwise, we are not in a position to know that so and so was supported without following to process.
Okay.
Don't have that detail.
Okay.
Chair, it's fine. I'm asking this, Chair, because I'm going to make a recommendation later on how I think we should carry on with this process going forward. But the Minister of Finance recently has been talking about the appointment of a central procurement somebody or the other. In other words, a chief tender adjudicator, for want of a better word. I don't know what's the correct word, but there's that office that is being put in place. How is that office going to assist or cooperate with departments? This department has lots of need, let's say a need for outsourcing or tendering or consultants and so on. Let's assume that this department has that need. How does it cooperate with National Treasury's concept of this procurement somebody going forward? I'm asking that question because I don't think we should be harping on what has happened in the past whilst we must go and look at it. But in your own mind, how do you see this office benefiting the wrongs that have happened in this department for the past 5 years? Do you have an idea how is it going to work? Because I think we must take this forward, but it depends on your answer.
Chairperson, can I... This person has been appointed, but can we provide information?
Look, before you appoint a person, you conceptualize what you want that person to do and how that person will be interlinked with the other departments. So we're looking for that conceptual framework. What is the conceptual framework of his or her job vis-a-vis the department?
Chairperson, I'm not competent on, as I'm sitting here. I know that I'm the National Treasurer, but the Minister, etc. So I just want to apologize and say I'm not competent to answer that question, but I can get the information and provide. I don't want to say I know, because that's not my area of competence.
All right.
Sir, thanks.
I just apologize.
I'm raising that question, Chair, because I think we must become serious about National Treasury or any other government department. You can't come and sit here and not expect to ask, to be answering hard questions that some of us are going to ask. So I would appreciate it if that is given to the Portfolio Committee so that together with the department we are able to eradicate some of these problems. And if that could come to the Portfolio Committee, I'd be grateful for that, Chair, through you. But in terms of, and I don't want to ask questions, that's why I said, Chair, I'm just going to be brief. But in terms of going forward, Chair, and I'm not taking away from the AG's report. Earlier on, Mr. Ainslie and his colleague that followed him indicated their frustration about the fact that this is really a post-mortem, not even like we should do it in scope for 18 months. This is like 5 years. 6 years ago that this thing has happened. Can I suggest, Chair, that between ourselves, SCOPA and the Portfolio Committee, and other Portfolio Committees if they choose, that we ask the Department to come to us at some point and to give us their current plans on consultants and the conditions. I mean, in other words, the lessons learned from these things. Now that we've learned these lessons, what are the department's current plans? Not current plans in terms of who do you want to appoint, but surely there must be a criteria that says, under these circumstances, you can't employ a consultant. You can't employ a consultant to do bookkeeping, for instance. We just will not be able to justify it. We've got far too many bookkeepers in South Africa. Under what conditions is correctional services to appoint a consultant, and if you do appoint the consultant, what are the steps that we are going to put in place, learning the lessons of what we've learned up to now, Chair? Because for me, that will be the lesson or the benefit of this report that we are dealing with now. What is the department doing going forward in terms of ensuring that we don't have another situation 10 years down the line where the AG comes up with another report that says this is how much has been fruitlessly or irregularly expended by the Department of Correctional Services? Because this is your process that you started. What I'm saying is that, talking on behalf of Mr. Self and others in my committee, we prepare to have that engagement with the department. But at least then it's forward-looking as opposed to backward. That's the proposal that I was putting on the table, Chair.
Okay. All right. Now, I'm sure speaking on behalf of Honorable Singh and Nyalungu and Ainslie, Mfundisi, Sal, I think it's a proposal that we would go along with. But we can discuss beyond today in terms of how do we I have four comrades who have raised their hands: Dr. Rabi, Nyalungu, Sal, and Comrade Troy. Dr. Rabi?
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to agree with the Honourable Mr. Smith here that we must ask hard questions here. That relates to good, sound governance and so forth. I'd like to ask the National Commissioner, you are the acting responsible officer, have you declared your financial interest to the Public Service Commission for the 2011-2012 year? I think it's important for us as a committee to know that. Thank you, Chair.
A positive, yes, I have, on time. If my memory serves me well, it was on the 2nd of April, 2011.
Hello?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Mine, I think, is very short. I just want to check
is there any chosen inmates to cook for other prisoners? Or are they catered? And if they are catered, how much are you paying for one plate of food per prisoner? Thank you.
Chairperson, I'll answer this question. It's a very good question, and it needs a proper response. In the general context of correctional services anywhere in the world, and in our environment in particular, we have 243 facilities. We want to indicate that in almost all the centers, it's inmates who are cooking, except for the 8 management centers, the big 5 that I've mentioned. Now, I want to say that it's common practice because officials don't cook for offenders. It's offenders cook for offenders. So if you go to Mpangeni, it will be offenders who are cooking for offenders. If you go to Boksburg facility, it will be offenders cooking for offenders and bake the bread and do other things. But the metamorphosis of correctional services has changed, and we have seen the drastic increase of inmate numbers. And this must be seen in congruence to the ability to provide services adequately, because in the first instance, inmates need to be fed. And if they're not fed on time in accordance to the schedule that they used to, you have a riot. I'm not trying to defend the concept of insourcing and outsourcing.
I think the thrust of the question where the rents and fails. I don't anticipate a follow-up. Where inmates cook for themselves, what are the attendant costs? Where they've been outsourced, what are the attendant costs?
The cost per meal, Chairperson, my memory fails me at this point in time. I usually have my figures and my fingertips. I don't have the figures here. But the cost benefit of having your inmates cooking for themselves in smaller centers in compliance to the smaller numbers are such that there is a benefit. But in bigger centers wherein you have infrastructure that has to be amplified, I know the cost for incarceration for offender per day in South Africa is about 250. That includes everything. So if we're to remove two per day, per inmate. But therefore, that includes food and everything. So if we were to work backwards from an economic perspective, we need to take the issue of health care out, that, and then it will lead to a certain portion that leads to food.
So I'm sure you've done that analysis.
Yes, we have done that, but I don't have the figure here. It should be around a rand or 2 or 5 rands per inmate.
Can we have that spent together with the other staff?
Yes, we'll certainly do that. Yes,
we can have a look. All right. Juan?
I almost forget what I want to say, but...
I would
like to start with the comment of the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Correctional Service. The department employed the same consultants. So, and it brings me back to page 47, that the consultant appointed appointed submitted 3 proposals, and then 3 different amounts on different dates. Now my question is, who was monitoring this consultant?
this amount, who was someone was to see that the dates is the same person and it's different amounts. And then when you get further down than the page chair, it says there's a project still not completed, but the consultant is fully paid. It's very dangerous chair. Then the other one chair is I will ask my questions in the same line. On page in the annual report, page 83 is the Van Rensdorp Correctional Center. The series, the same consultant who built the series center is the same consultant who built the Van Rensdorp center, and a again chair who was monitoring that. And it says it's 75% behind schedule. And I know what I'm talking about because I pass Van Rensdorp prison every Friday and every Sunday, because I have to go that road. So it's, for me, is what is the department doing with this? If not, why not? Thank you, Chair.
All right. Can we have a response?
Chairperson, the question relates to item 2, which is virtualization. And the company that we're speaking about here is called StoreTech. The line which the member is alluding us to is a consultant appointed 3 proposal, 9.3 million, 12 million, and 11.7 million. We want to indicate that that software that was being procured from StoreTech, the consultants ran the show. There was no bid. There was no tender processing. It was based on pure quotation. And amounts of this nature for a software of that magnitude, there should have been a tender process, open competitive bid. In this instance, there was none. And then we have seen from the reports that were given that the consultants sat and decided as to which value. I have always exemplified this by saying that there were 3 quotations, and then the consultants set and threw the 3 quotations up. Whichever landed first is the one that they decided upon, because it was very clear that there was no correctional service, because it's one company providing the same quotation on different dates of the month. And this is very clear violation of PFMA, maladministration, and a fraudulent process, because the processes of following tender processes were not in place. And to make it worse, no single member of correctional services sat in that. All I can say is that the report that we said we'll provide to yourself will indicate very clearly that there was serious maladministration bordering to pilfering of state funds. So all I could say is that to the member, please have confidence in us that we'll provide leadership on this matter. With respect to Van Rensdorp, which you say is a passion to you and of course to us as correctional services, the facility that you have mentioned has been long delayed, and there's been processes that were failing to put in place. One thing that I can say that correctional services has always, and we are trying to remedy that, we do not have project management in place which deals with the oversight of monitoring evaluation of work. Much as this is a DPW project, in our environment we need to have people who follow up on projects that serve us and we have interested in. I must indicate here that because of this oversight and lack of people sitting in our offices, I have therefore given the fact that there are projects of magnitude suspended and official for lack of oversight of key strategic projects, and especially in facilities.
Okay.
Mine is a question, really. It is a recommendation I will make to our committee, SCOPA, that yes, indeed, the department comes back. and engages us on the annual report. For three reasons, I think. Firstly, I think we will dispute that a claim that the National Commission has made that there has been a decrease in the number of consultants. A claim is made here and in the most recent annual report. To do that, to have that discussion, we'd have to go into the annual report more in depth than we can now. The second reason, Chair, is if you look at this annual report, there are 15 beautiful pages in gold, scope by resolutions. And if you go through those scope of resolutions, very, very few have been carried out, including the one which talks about civil servants in the department doing business with the department. AG makes the same finding as he has on the previous occasion on that issue. That's a subject of a resolution here which has not been carried out for that reason. And the third reason would be the reason for the qualification, again, of your financial statements and the increasing number of various serious emphasis of matters. So really, when we have a management committee meeting or committee meets, I'm going to suggest that the department comes back. It's been very interesting listening to the commissioner. Sometimes it's quite difficult to get to grips with him. Maybe we need a second chance to do that. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Comrade Minister, I do think that I want to agree with Comrade Roy, but not on account of the annual report. But firstly, if you look at the report that we're dealing with today, you realize that there are a number of contracts undertaken about which some work still needs to be done to get to the bottom of what actually happened, wherein we can then be discussing with the department item by item and say, for example, the visualization project. Who signed off? Or in fact on any of these projects where people were paid the full amount and up to today those projects are not finished. Who was the person responsible? And we're able to agree on course of action, whether the people are still with the department or they're out of the department. Because some of these things, actually, if you go through this, you realize that there was just a deliberate attempt to get money out of the department. And make it available to other people. Now, I do have an interest on why was a decision taken to freeze the filling of posts and on the other hand then have consultants. Because I think there's something there about the feeling of posts having been frozen and then you have consultants coming in. I suspect the decision to freeze was a strategic decision so that you open the way to have consultants coming in, because then you have no staff. But the conditions say you must transfer skills and train officials when they are not there. So, for me, that will be very important to look at. But equally, who were the accounting officers? Because I think there were many. There was a time when, you know, there were these continuous changes. Who were in the management team? How do they account for some of these decisions that were taken? What light can they throw to the processes that unfolded at that time? But equally, Comrade Smith, for me, the list that they already have of this 2 billion, has an audit been done now by the department on each one of them? And maybe you will have a, what is the audit term? A materiality level, and say all contracts of around 6,000, we're going to ignore them. But any contract above 20 million, 30, 50 million, we're going to try and check what were the processes that were followed. So we're able to have a sense of which contracts did not follow due process and which ones followed. Because then we don't want a situation where you just take on the 27 that the AG has done. That's for the rest, because they were not done, well, we can forget about them. Because the responsibility of ensuring that the right things are done does not have to depend on the Auditor General's office. You know, so for me, that would be very important. But I'm very much interested, and I know, Comrade Minister, the point will be it is out of our hands, but I would imagine having laid a charge, if you have, you will be interested in ensuring that this is done. I know there was an SIU report that spoke to a whole host of challenges in the department. And the fellow who was the CFO, Patrick Gillingham, was accused in the presentation to us by the SIU of having benefited from some of the contractors to the tune of over 2 million. You know, rugby tickets, cars, renovations, overseas trips, this and that. And a case was supposed to have been opened. And until today, we don't know what's happening. Why is this guy not being brought before the court of law so he can clear his name, when other people have been so enthusiastically brought to court, prosecuted and sentenced? I mean, Jacques Libby got 15 years for 250,000, and Patrick Gillingham is still a free man out there. And for me, that is a test case. All these other things that you are having, we're going to act, it might be that, well, if you have small fries, yes, you will act against them. There is a guy who was the number two or number three in the department, CFO. SIU has done investigation, have the evidence, categorized, indicated all the things that have happened. The case taken to the NPA. The other time when I checked, it was, they said they wanted further information. You know, that's what happens when people don't want to prosecute, provide further information. Where are we now? So that we can have the confidence that even these ones, you're not just going to hand them over to the police if need be, and then look the other direction. And I think, Comrade Minister, in a way, and I'm not being empiricist, but this is the manifestation of the challenge of short-termism. We're talking to the commissioner, he was not there. And we're talking about 2006, 2007, 8, 9. I was not there. These things are bad, not under my watch. And that's what we get in almost all departments. People who come and say, I was not there. But now that I'm here, you will see these things won't happen. And we find this exasperating. Very, very exasperating. So I'm not sure, but the question of people who must give the rationale on why certain decisions were taken not being here, it throttles oversight, because we're not able to get, no one is able to make us understand why certain decisions were taken. You say you had a CFO, that person has left for defense. Are these the kind of things we're going to see in defense now? What does that represent, a promotion or a demotion? Well, I don't know what position he or she is holding in defense, but I'm just saying it does not assist our process of oversight when we don't have the person who signed on the document to say this must happen. And to be able to stay and justify why certain decisions were taken or why certain decisions were not taken. And so far, all the departments that we've had to deal with around the use of consultants, the monitoring, the management of these contracts, how some of the contracts were awarded, just a problem. Now, you ask yourself whether this is indeed a challenge or this was just done deliberately because it was profitable to do things that way. I think that's where the problem is and that's where the challenge is. And we can't say because it happened 3 or 4 years ago, it's 5 billion rand, it has been used, it's okay, it's water under the bridge, let's look ahead. It can't be. And until the mindset is corrected that we have a responsibility to our country, we have a responsibility to our own people, we'll persist to have these problems. And I'm struggling to understand why when people are paid to bring about change, they do the worst. And yet there were times when people were working to bring about change without being paid. And they were doing very well. I struggle to deal with this. And I know Marx did not deal with this question, so we have been failing to crack it. But it is in the absence of that understanding, the laws are there to assist us to take action against people who don't do the right things. So I don't know, but I think the issue of the consultants whose involvement is very dubious in certain contracts, I think as a committee we do have an interest of getting them to come here and justify themselves. And I think the Deputy Auditor General has put it well to say these private companies must demonstrate that it's not just about the bottom, you know, the bottom line, about the profit, because they are supposedly South Africans who have an interest in seeing the country move forward. What is their contribution whenever they get contracts in government? So I'm sure we'll be able to, I mean, if the department paid 14 million to consultants to assist you with your internal audit function, and 14 million down the line we still have this report, this annual report, then surely they must help us understand why they deserve that money. 14 million in 1 year, and the annual report is as it is. Qualified on assets, 3 major areas of qualification on assets only. It cannot be. And I'm very certain, Comrade Roy, that because of our interest around internal controls, when we deal with the annual report, surely we'll be interested to know who we're helping with internal, you know, with internal audit, so they can come and help to enlighten us, to have a sense of exactly what are the challenges that they're facing, you know, within the department. But let me leave it at that. Save to say that if you look at the AG's report of yesterday, the issues around IT are still highlighted as, you know, repeat challenges. The issues around the management of leave, overtime, and suspension, because these relate to service delivery. How do you manage people coming to work, performing a service, whether it is monitoring consultants or it is doing whatever they are supposed to be doing? So if these are not properly aligned and in place, they have a direct impact on the capacity of the department to do what it's supposed to do. But let me leave it at that, Comrade Minister, because we may be here until the cows come home. But I want to hand over to you. I'm sure there will be issues that you would want to talk to. But SIU issue and the issue of your former CFO, Patrick Gillingham, is of very, very direct interest to the committee, because we're reported to, and I'm sure we have previous resolutions that spoke to these issues around the need to ensure that disciplinary measures and criminal action against those who have committed criminality are taken. Let me hand over to you, Comrade Minister.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chair, and thank you for the colleagues for the input. It's very helpful for all of us, but perhaps let me start by saying that I was looking at these cardinals yesterday, and I was reminded of one instance where one of the cardinals used to lay complaints with Norman. Tomorrow I'll wake up and I'll raise this with the Pope. And then he was elected Pope, and he was still saying, I'm going to raise this with the Pope. And his friend says, no, but you are the Pope. I'm not being facetious about that. I think, first of all, we are elected representatives here in Parliament and also in the executive. I share your exasperation, but if the matter of the audit has been done in this particular way for the past since 1910, do we really, don't we owe it to the next 20 years, as we finish 20 years now, to say we have experimented with this method of accounting, that it would be after 5 years, after 3 years, and then someone must come, and I readily, firmly accept that one is a successor to whatever happened in the Department of Prisons from 1911 and the Correctional Services afterwards. We are the successor of that, so that there's no question of saying that no, this one is this. No, the person who is there in charge must then answer all the questions. But to make it easy, really, don't we, as ourselves, Portfolio Committee, Executive, SCOPA, have to revise the issue so that Spoondebele actually accounts in that same year about what he has done, because he would have taken the money for that year and spent it, and they come and account for that. I don't think for Treasury and all of us it's difficult to say, this is what you said we're going to do and we spent it, but it's not spent where it is. And I'm then able to account, not about 2006 and 2007 and 2008. Then you see, my memory fails me here, the records. Is there no way in which after 20 years we can then say, from 2014, the accounting, this exercise that we're doing here, people spending money from May 2014 to the following financial year, then they account in this manner. The auditor actually doesn't delay for 3 years, 4 years to bring this report, and we account that same year, and there's no question of having forgotten and everything, because it's quite torturous, this part. 2007, who was here? Oh, was it no, it was not Minister Mzimela the late. It was not Minister Skosane. It was not Minister Nonde Balfour. Oh, no, it was not Mapisa Nagula. It's so torturous. Why don't we have this thing? Because we do, in this day and age of technology, actually have the report of each year and have SCOPA interrogating this thing, so that what Mr. Smith was talking about, for instance, culture of accountability, the culture of following procedures, the culture of value for money. You are able to do that within that space of 12 to 15 months, not 5-6 years. it really makes it very, very difficult for all concerned. And when you see a report in the newspaper, Correctional Service did this. Hey, I didn't even have the time to make this mistake. But already, we have done this thing and so forth. And we haven't even had time to make the mistake at all, but you are the person who is accountable for it. I'm just throwing it in as a suggestion that with your experience of SCOPA over 20 years, which is not 5 years, it's 20 years now, collectively, can't we short-circuit this thing such that each department actually accounts within 12 to 15 months, not 3, 5, 6 years? And it would make it easier for all of us. Having said that, we are also painfully aware, Chairperson, that the Department of Correctional Services hasn't had a clean audit from 1994. That is a long time, 19 years. We haven't had a clean audit. So it's a matter that is of major worry to us, I see. National Commissioner, why is this thing? I don't know what happened in the past, but can we try to bring this thing in? And that's why we get into a dynamic relationship with the Auditor General to then say, let's have these meetings that we are having. Let the Commissioner and the management have an interaction with Treasury and Auditor General on a regular basis, because you are not dealing with a hostile force when you are dealing with the Auditor General. We are dealing with someone who is going to say, watch out here. Then we can then separate. Here was a mistake. Here was an offense. Here was a crime. And then you deal with the mistake. We are making a mistake here. We are actually now committing an offense. You are now actually committing a crime. And so you are able to do that, to do it in retrospect with someone who is out farming somewhere, retired, it's a difficult thing. I'm just putting that for whatever it's worth. But I do appreciate also that this is an overused word of turnaround. Yeah, it's an overused word. But My predecessor, Minister Nosweyo Mapisa Ngabula, in 2010, yes, they did with the National Commissioner when they were discovering some of these things to say, let's do something about it. And that's where we get this question of consultant over consultant, to say, let's bring it down. And of course the figures that I have was that this came down from 183 consultants to 29. It was 183 consultants to 9 officials, to a situation of 29 consultants to 39. That's the figure I have, which we'll have to interrogate. But this will help by this report from PwC. It's quite useful for us to then go through that with the Treasury and all of us to do that. And because we can't have a situation where it's business as usual for a department for 20 years not to have a clean audit. It can't be correct. It can't be correct. So I think therefore we will ask Gajen will know. Judge us not from the heights we have not reached, but by the depths from which we have come. Thank you very much.
We want to thank you, Comrade Minister. You are born again. You're having made it. Has served a very useful purpose, because the Commissioner would not have had political cover if he had come here by himself. Might have leashed him by now, you never know. But troubled as we are by these things that we're talking to, we still nonetheless want to see progress, and especially determined and concerted effort to get things right. Not only in this department, but in all government departments, we really want to see things going right. And I hope the suggestion that Comrade Vincent has made will be able to take it forward and combine our efforts to link up with the department and say, how do we together take the process forward? And I'm sure, all things being equal, we should be able to make a turn, the office of the department, to try and understand, you know, in loco, some of the systems and processes in place to try and address some of these challenges. So we'd like to thank everyone. Kali, we appreciate your being here, National Treasury, and our comrades from the Portfolio Committee. I think we unfortunately are done for today. Next week it's Public Works on the 20th. The 19th is the Mampara Day because Home Affairs could not be available. Thanks, comrades. We're done.
Was er am Unten? Was er am Lucian Loki in Utina?